letting the music play a little extra today. Do you know why?
I don't care because I like it. Why?
Because you told me that you're tired. So I'm maximizing our time on air. I'm going to wait until the last possible second before we start. I'm maximizing our time, I think, aren't I?
You're minimizing the time we have to talk?
I'm minimizing the time we talk, but I'm maximizing, like, the bang per buck.
Oh, it's time for the business lunch.
See what I mean? Didn't that work out nicely?
You are Maximus.
Right.
First he said maximating, which I wasn't sure
I'm
what
maximating.
That was.
I think the English language is flexible enough to where if there's not a word that really fits what you need to say,
you just make one up.
It's alive. The language is alive.
You mix a couple of words and everybody's happy.
Uber wasn't a verb 2 years ago.
Right. Now everybody knows it. Brexit wasn't a word 3 weeks ago, and now that's all you hear.
Exactly.
Can I tell you, speaking of words?
What are words for?
Listen to this and tell me if this makes sense to you. And I'll give you more than one example of this. Over the weekend, I went into a clothing store to buy some clothes.
With your girls? Because no, they're just, supposed to dress you?
That's coming. There will be a time where
we're not going to care anymore.
It's been very hard to get all of our schedules in sync. But in this particular instance, I'm going away. You know, it's my 25th anniversary on Thursday.
That's awesome. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
I know I tease you, but that's quite an accomplishment.
Thank you. It is. For my wife, it is.
I was going to say, I'm a centenary gift.
It's easy for me.
You gotta ruin it. You can't just take a compliment.
So I wanted to buy a snappy outfit for my anniversary,
oh,
you know?
Oh, my God. Did you say snappy?
I hope there are pinstripes involved.
I went into a clothing store and I said, take me to your snappiest outfits, please. Toot sweet. So I went in. I had four articles of clothing. And I didn't like any of them. I went into the dressing room. I tried on two shirts and two pairs of pants. I was not pleased with either of the shirts or either of the pair of pants. And upon exiting the dressing room, the sales girl said, how did those work out for you? And I said, I'm not happy with any of them. To which she replied, awesome.
She did not even listen to you.
She said, awesome. Now, along the same lines, one day later, I got one of those calls that you get on your cell phone from people wanting to sell you things that you don't want.
Right.
So the guy said, is this Mr. I pick up and he goes, is this Mr. Leaf? And he's close enough. And I go, yeah, this is Mr. Leaf. And he goes, how are you today, Mr. Leaf? And I go, honestly, this is the worst day of my life. This is the absolute worst I've ever been. And he goes, that's fantastic. Would you like to talk to us? I know.
They
was just reading from a script.
Listen.
Was he a recording? Because the new ones are the recordings where they wait for you to speak.
I know. Jim got caught in that because I hear him going, yeah, can you hear me now? The guy was saying, can you hear me now?
On recording?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was so genius.
They speak and they pause. They wait for a noise elsewhere to end. And then they go, oh, okay, I was just kidding. So anyway.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, it's so aggravating.
But doesn't this tell, and we already know these guys are just reading from a script, although a salesperson isn't reading from a script, but she was running on fumes at that point. She didn't care.
She didn't care.
I hate these clothes. They're terrible. Oh, that's awesome.
Awesome.
Did you want to look for some more? Yeah, some more clothes that I don't like? Yeah, could you help me with that? That'd be great.
Nobody takes pride in their work anymore, and we are included.
I said snappy, not snippy.
Right. Right. I know. But other than that, everything's great.
You got to stop bringing Starburst in here, by the way.
I will. We're almost done with the bag. They had a sale at Walgreens. I bought one. I got a bag free. I couldn't help myself. The awesome one in the past that was the best for me was in a and this shows more than anything that the word awesome, which once meant something, means nothing. My family and I were in a restaurant a couple of years ago. The guy asked me, the waiter, what would you like to drink? And I go, water. And he goes, awesome. And then I thought to myself, that just proves that awesome means nothing anymore. The fact that I came in and just wanted water to drink, that's not awesome. That's far from awesome.
Well, it makes his job easier because he can get the busboy to do it.
It's still not, but is it still awesome?
No, I hate using that word. And sometimes I feel the need to use it. And then I roll my eyes at myself.
Because it's so trite at this point.
Yeah. And it's like when I say it, I mean it.
Right.
I'll go. Somebody will say something fantastic, and I'll go, oh, that is awesome.
Right.
And I'm like, why did I say that?
Because it seems it's like too easy a go-to word
right.
At this point. Chris Bryant last night had three home runs and two doubles and
five at-bats. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
That's awesome, but me having water at a restaurant isn't quite as awesome.
Did you see them try to get him to take a curtain call on the road?
No, I didn't see that.
After the third home run, Jason Hayward was like pushing him out of the dugout. He didn't do it, but...
He didn't want to do it after that?
On the road, that'd be bad for him, I think.
In Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Except that, normally I would agree with you, but there were so many Cubs fans in Cincinnati
right,
watching that game that it almost would have made sense.
How come is that a place where a lot of, because it's not that far?
Yeah, it's a
Six
weird
hours?
Combination of the Reds having an awful season, yeah. So any Cubs fans in the area, why wouldn't you go and see the game, you know?
Is that opposite of awesome, awful?
Yeah, I think that would be fair,
yeah. Because now every time somebody says awesome, I can't believe the salesperson with you. I really can't. I'm going back to that. Because she 100% wasn't listening to your answer.
You couldn't be more checked out than that girl was. And I just accepted it.
Why didn't you say awesome? I'm heartbroken. I wanted a snappy outfit for my anniversary.
Right.
And these don't look good on me. They look better on the hanger.
Can you
awesome?
Show me? No, can you tell me where the county seat is?
I want to go to the county seat, please.
What kind of snappy outfit are you looking for? I know it might be a surprise if Terry's listening, but...
Nothing outrageous. Just, you know, something nice. I thought I'd go a little unusual and go with a polo shirt and some baggy shorts. I don't know.
Why do you need new ones?
Make sure you have a place to put your hammer.
Maybe I will.
Oh, don't make fun of his carpenter pants. He's quite the handyman.
Yep.
Or a tool. I don't know which.
I went to Lou Manfred. That's not nice. Kevin, write that down. That happened at 10:14. I went to Lou Manfredini's new clothing store.
What's it called?
Lou's for Awesome Men. It's in the Brickyard Mall.
Pam, that's good.
Thanks.
That was very good.
Thank you.
Pam, how about this the sales associate who totally didn't listen to him?
I think maybe she's being not cranky. I can't think of the right word. Like my husband, like I was telling your producer, like if we're on the road and someone cuts him off, he'll be like awesome.
Oh, just to be ironic?
Or just to be I don't know, cranky or nasty or something. I don't know. Or like he'll spill.
Like smooth move, X-Lax, like kind of.
Yeah, the opposite. Play the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'll spill coffee or something, and he'll be like awesome.
Oh,
you know what I mean? He'll say it in a, I don't know, kind of a nasty tone.
Like sarcastic, sort of?
Yeah, thank you. I couldn't think of the word sarcastic.
But should a sales girl who's hoping that I'm buying clothes at their clothing store, should she have said that?
She's not on commission. She doesn't care what you do.
I guess.
Like, was she the one who brought you the clothes to begin with?
No. I did all that on my own. She just happened to be there as I was exiting the dressing rooms.
She could be like, awesome. Now I gotta go put them away.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Because my husband will say it like that, like sarcastic.
But you don't want to share that with a customer. That should be private, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't think kids know these days anymore how to be in.
Was she young?
She was in her early 20s, 23, 24.
Oh, so she should know better.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a little.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pam. It must be fun living with your husband.
It's awesome.
Good days and bad days.
Thanks,
Pam.
Thank
you for calling.
Appreciate it.
All right, we're going to do one more quick phone call, and then we have to take a break. Back to the Cubs game. Janet?
Hi. Good morning.
Hi,
morning.
Janet.
Love your show.
Thank you.
They interviewed Chris Bryant after the game. I don't know if you saw that or not. But they asked him about not doing the curtain call, and he said it was against what he believed, and it was an away game, and he didn't want to like rub their faces in it and whatever. But if it was at home, he definitely would have. But not in an away game. That's not. He said it wasn't appropriate.
What a class act to think all that.
So. Isn't he awesome?
Yeah. He is awesome. He really is. But that just shows. I mean, not only talented, but having the wherewithal to say. I'm in somebody else's ballpark right now. This is inappropriate.
Sportsmanship.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you, Janet. Appreciate
it. You're welcome. Love your show.
You're
Thank
awesome.
You. And You're
I
awesome.
Meant, I meant that.
All right.
We'll take a quick break, and then we have a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You have a new nickname aside from Maximus and Mr. Snappy.
Those are two of my many nicknames.
You are the Candyman.
That's my CB handle. I just got a CB radio. They're very popular.
Do you know I wanted one always so badly, and my mom would never, ever let me get one because she said, all you're going to do is flirt with the truckers. I said, why do you think I want one?
Good that you admitted it. Good.
She would never let me get one.
Oh, no. You'd be married to somebody in a truck right now. In a Mack truck. You'd be in with them.
That wouldn't be so bad as long as they had a sleeper in the back.
Yep. That would be nice.
Why? You are like the Starburst kid, and you gently place two on my computer monitor to inspire me. I can't wait till the end of the show to...
I said, this is a situation that B.F. Skinner came up with years ago. It's conditioning. Whereas, if it's rewarding. If the show goes well, you get a couple of starbursts. I think that's a good situation, isn't it?
Yeah, but you have to hold them. You can't put them in front of me. I already ate one of the two.
Oh, you had to wait till the show is over.
I know it's going to be a good show.
So from now on, if we do this, I have to just hold them, tell you that the offer's in place, but not give them to you, not make them accessible to you. Right? Is that how you do it from now on? All right.
I live my life by the dangling carrot.
Yep. I understand that.
Seriously?
Most of us, many of us do.
I know, but I have to see it.
Yeah.
And be reaching for it.
Yep.
But if it's within reach, I will eat the carrot.
That's against the rules of the dangling carrot principle. You know, everybody, I hadn't had Starbursts in like 5 years for whatever reason.
You've just been ODing on them.
I told you last week, I'm at Walgreens and they have a buy one, get one free. And I saw them and I go, well, I remember liking Starbursts. So all of a sudden now I went from having no Starbursts to two big bags of Starbursts. And everybody I give them to, as they eat them, you get that same look on your face, which is, wow, these are way better than I remember them. They're really good. Starbursts are fantastic. And now they're in a bunch of flavors. Like, they used to just have four or five. Now they're in, like, all kinds of tropical blends and sour and stuff. They're really good.
Yeah, but you keep giving me the watermelon.
Oh, I thought you like... Oh, you like the strawberry, don't you?
And there's...
They're almost the same color shade.
I know. They have to have a different color.
Yeah.
And now that we're old, eating Starburst, yep. You got to look real carefully because it does say the flavor on there. I never knew they had a watermelon one.
No, I've been eating it for years. No, that's one of the new flavors. There's blackberry now.
There's those are blackberry.
Really, yeah, I had blackberry. They're really good. Wow. I'm going to live just on Starbursts.
You have been.
I think I have.
You really have been.
I know.
Somebody wanted to mention that Chris Bryant, if you saw the highlights, Chris Bryant handed a young child in the stand a bat.
Could this guy be any nicer? Chris Bryant's like perfect. And somebody said, and I don't know if this is true, Steve, maybe you heard this because I don't know if this is true. They were trying to figure out last night if any player in baseball history had ever done what he did last night, which is three home runs and two doubles. And they had gone back to like 1910 as of last night's broadcast. So they were going to go back even further to see if anybody had ever done what he did last night.
I don't think that anyone has.
About that.
I mean, I've watched a lot of baseball, and I've never seen it.
Baseball's been going on, professional baseball, for over 100 years.
Yeah.
So magnify that by how many games per day, and no player had ever done that in baseball.
It's what, 15 bases? 15 bases in a one at bat, or one game.
12, 13, 14, 15, I think 16.
16?
Yeah. Three home runs, that's four each, so that's 12. And two doubles is four, so that's 16.
This is the cute side of you guys.
Baseball math.
I love it.
Cincinnati, the second base is half as far, so those two of those doubles count for three bases.
I forgot about that.
Come on.
But how isn't that weird that baseball's been going on for that long and nobody's done that?
To the sports office and Dave Ennett.
All right, Dave will know. Hey, Dave.
We can confirm now that there were 16 total bases amassed by Chris Bryant last night.
Bertrand Rohn.
I had 17 in a lob ball game in 1974.
Did you?
I did.
The record for the Cubs was 14 prior to last night, shared by Aramis Ramirez.
Yeah.
Two other players. Can you guess either one of them?
Are they greats? Are they baseball Cub greats?
Well, I guess it all depends on how you're related to them. Or if you are, Ernie Banks was one of them.
That was going to be one of my guesses.
You just Mr. say Cub. Ernie Banks.
He's Mr. Cub.
Now, the other...
Mick Kelleher.
No, but you're not far off.
Really?
George Mitterwolf.
Wow.
The Baron?
And here's the weird part about this. George Mitterwolf did this in a game in 1974.
Did he have four home runs in a game?
He had, I believe, three home runs.
Oh.
One of them was a grand slam in the first inning.
Yowza.
Drove in eight runs in that game, and I happened to be in the bleachers at Wrigley Field that day.
Is
that 1974.
Is that the one they lost to Philadelphia 25-22?
No, I think they won the game, but it was like 18-12 or something.
The game that Steve's referring to is for, on WGN television for a couple of years in the middle of winter. They would show that Cubs-Phillies game that was about the score, right, Steve? It was something like 24-22 at the end. And then they would tack on an ending of Ernie Banks hitting a home run. And Ernie Banks didn't play in that game. He had already retired. But WGN would tack on an ending, a fake ending of the Cubs winning it.
It was 1979, 23-22.
Yeah.
And Mike Schmidt absolutely killed the Cubs that day. Among others.
Yeah.
He had a couple of home runs.
Do you have the date? Was it in April?
It was May 17th.
May 17th.
All right, hang on. Will wants to jump into the sports talk. Hey, Will, what's your nickname and where are you calling from?
Morning, guys. My nickname is Wendy Lover.
Oh.
All right, you're
That's
in.
Romantic.
No, I was listening to Pat Hughes and Ron doing the game on the radio last night, and towards the end of the game, they were looking up the records. They said the record is 4 home runs, 1 double and 1 single for 19 total bases. Then they read through the record book. There are 16 guys in baseball history who had 4 home runs. They even broke it down by league, 6 in the American League, 10 in the National League. And so Chris Bryant sets the Cubs record for most bases in a game, but he doesn't set the baseball record. That's still 19. They said the name, and right now I can't remember.
Is it Sean Abner for
baseball guys? It might have been Hank Aaron, I think.
Oh, was it? For some reason, the name Sean Abner comes up as a guy who may have done that.
I'm thinking it was Hank Aaron that they said that had the 19 total bases in a game.
Josh
is the record.
Josh Hamilton had 18 total bases in a game for Texas in 2012, and there are several guys who had 16, including.
Right.
Mike Cameron, who had a 4 home run game
player
against the White Sox.
Yeah.
They said there are 16 guys who had 4 home runs in baseball history. So that's a long list there of 16 bases.
Oh, Sean Green, 19
Sean Green.
Total bases.
Sean Green,
the
not
Dodgers.
Sean Abner.
Yep.
Now, and something else about Chris Bryant last night, those 3 home runs didn't make it by a row or 2 or 3.
No.
They were way, way, way out. I mean, way up in the upper deck. All 3 of them were just blasts.
Dave, I was saying how they were trying to, some of his teammates trying to get him to take a curtain call. Does that ever happen on the road?
Well, so many Cubs
retiring,
fans
yeah.
there, though. His home runs, by the way.
Stand by, Will. The keg's in the corner, by the way. Stand by.
Hey, Will, 1,257 combined feet
wow.
on his 3 home runs.
Wow.
That's a good night's work.
Yeah, that is a good night's work.
No, I heard an interview. They interviewed him after the game on the field, and he said that they were trying to get him to take a curtain call, but he's like, you don't do that in baseball. It's their home park, and I don't want to try to show anybody up. And he was just being really, really classy about the whole thing. And he's like, so, yeah, it was a good night for me, but you don't show people up in their own home park.
What a nice guy. Will, thanks for calling the WGN Man Cave. We'll get back to you. Maybe we'll be talking to White Sox after the news.
Thanks, guys. Have a good show.
Thanks, Will. Thanks. Dave, thanks for joining us and helping us with that.
Thanks. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, please do. All right, more after the news. It's Mike and Mike on WGN. Steve, thank you. On behalf of all Americans, thank you, Steve.
It's no problem.
There's a new novelty treat out there, and I want to know if anybody has tried the fried Cheeto at Burger King.
Oh, I've heard about it, but I have not tried it. It's fried Cheetos? What is it?
Yeah, it's a mac and Cheetos. So it's like, have you ever had a mac and cheese ball?
No.
They're really good.
No.
Trader Joe's has really good ones you can bake in your own oven. Does Burger King still sell hamburgers?
Yeah, they have hamburgers at Burger King, sure.
In case you've been living under a rock or too busy to eat things.
By the way, that's derogatory to people who do live under rocks. I'm always offended by that term.
Burger King began selling a wild new concoction known simply as Mac and Cheetos. The new food item is exactly as it sounds, gooey pieces of mac and cheese nestled right inside of deep-fried Cheetos.
Healthy, obviously. You know it's healthy.
Can I tell you, if you're going to go Cheetos, you got to go crunchy because the puffy ones taste like styrofoam.
Yeah, they're like packing bubbles.
That is exactly what they are. But now...
Orange packing bubbles.
Stuff mac and cheese in there. How do you stuff a Cheeto? This is not a joke.
I don't know the answer to that. I know this is un-American to say. I'll be branded a communist for even saying this, but I don't like Cheetos at all, or Fritos, or anything that ends in Ito. I just don't like them.
What about the Frito Bandito?
I do enjoy his early work.
John Williams, are you hearing this?
Can you sing the song?
Ay, 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 I am the Frito Bandito. That song?
Yeah.
You think you're going to stump him ever?
Yeah, but I think that's really, really politically incorrect. You're not supposed to sing it now.
You made me sing it. I didn't want to sing it. You tricked me, John Williams.
I take them from you. I take them from you. That's all.
Here's a question I would like you to ask of Teddy Roosevelt. Would he eat a Burger King mac and Cheetos?
Have you seen pictures of that thing?
Yeah, but...
It looks good.
It looks like it's from outer space.
I'm not a fan of food manufactured like the hot dogs with the chili inside.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
Yeah.
You know, that's wrong. So I'm kind of with you on that. But that Burger King thing that they're talking about looks kind of yummy.
The mac and Cheetos.
Anyway, the reason I called was...
Yes, John?
Just to mention, you guys are so kind. You gave me way too much time last week.
Yeah, so we got to go. Thanks for calling.
Damn, I was that close. I got on the Cheeto thing.
It's a big day for you.
Tickets to the Teddy Roosevelt Show go on sale at noon today. So remember, if you want to go see TR on stage talking about all things presidential, political today and 100 years ago, go to WGNradio.com/events. WGNradio.com/events, and tickets to our extraordinary show go on sale at noon. At noon.
You know why this is appropriate we have you on? Because it's going to take place at the MAC at College of DuPage.
Listen how happy you made John Williams.
I know.
You made him very happy.
So we timed this perfectly. Well, another brilliant mistake by Bill and Wendy.
So thank you for letting me get the plug in. The show's going to be... pretty soon.
John, we had several people when we had you on last week. We had a lot of people, well, complaining, but then the ones that weren't complaining were asking if the show is appropriate for children, and it is, right? Kids can come and see the show.
Yeah, there's a lot of pretty whip-smart junior high-age kids. Mom and dads bring them there, and sometimes they ask the best questions.
I believe it.
Some of these kids are into it.
It's the return of Teddy Roosevelt, presented by Conasec and Dillon. It's happening August 13th, 10 a.m. at the MAC, and on the College of DuPage or at the College of DuPage. And tickets go on sale today, and they go very quickly. Again, how do people get tickets at noon?
WGNradio.com/events.
Perfecto mundo.
John, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good show.
You too.
We have other plans. He was gone.
He already left.
He was out of
here. John Williams has left the building. All right, we need to take a quick break, and then we'll check in with Ashley Escada from CNET, find out what's going on in the tech world. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's a Tech Tuesday, and I'm hearing rumors that the iPhone 7 and 7S is coming out. So coming on right now is Ashley Escada, senior editor at CNET TV, and she's the host of Tomorrow Daily. Ashley, the iPhone 7 and 7S is rumored to be coming out soon, huh?
Yeah. They usually do their sort of an annual unveil event in around September. So it's we're starting to really see kind of the rumors and all of the this could be a machine casing from the iPhone 7 and things like that start to pop up a lot faster and more furiously in the next couple months.
All right, what are the differences going to be? Because you know what, they don't need to come out with a new phone every year.
Yeah, I mean, well,
and sales are down, isn't it? Aren't they down?
I think for the first time, it was the first time they had not seen, year over year. But I think that's because usually with the 6S models, like you don't see the same kind of adoption that you see with like a full upgrade. So when you go from, 6 to 7, instead of that 6S is usually a little bit different. And people tend to keep their phones a little bit longer. So,
yeah, because you have to pay $1 million. You're on a. It's like you're renting a car. You're renting a phone.
Right.
Right. So people tend to keep their phones longer. So it's sort of and people like to wait for these really big changes. And the iPhone 7 is interesting because the rumors all point to the fact that the design itself is not really going to see a whole lot of change. We might see some those antenna bands on the back. We won't be seeing those anymore. But we are also maybe seeing on maybe a Pro model or the 6 or the 7 Plus, we might be seeing double cameras to help with sharper images when you zoom in on a photo. So when you take a picture anywhere and you go, oh, look at this little detail in a picture, and you zoom in, it tends to be pretty blurry sometimes.
Yeah.
And so the rumor is there's a possibility we might see dual cameras. But, you know, of course, Apple never comments on anything, and we have to just kind of go by what we hear. But the big rumor is they might just get rid of the headphone jack. So it might just no
one.
Oh,
then I do. Then I do need a new phone. I didn't know that. Yeah, would anybody buy a new phone just because of that?
And
nobody would.
Don't you need it?
Yes and no. So the headphone jack is the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack is actually a pretty. It's a little bit antiquated in design. Like it's been the same for a very long time.
Yeah.
And
if it ain't broke,
so that's very true. Exactly. I mean, I agree with that. But on that same note, if you can eliminate that, you can make the phone slimmer. And at what point does Apple just say, well, your phone floats in front of you. It's so lightweight. Like I appreciate the thinner design aesthetic, but to make it thin just for thinness's sake it doesn't inspire a lot of excitement for me. I'm like, well, show me why. Like, why it doesn't need to be thinner? Why does it need this? It's they're saying it's just going to be a lightning port, and that would be they'll have headphones that'll have lightning port cables as opposed to regular headphone jacks. And I'm sure, just like Apple does with everything else, they'll have an adapter.
Yeah, that's crazy. You got to buy adapters for everything. You have to buy an adapter to bring it into your house. Just bought a MacBook Pro, and I'm ashamed of myself. I needed a new computer, but I hate that I've given in to the Apple. I really hate that I have, but I love it, I have to admit.
Apple has a real advantage in that they are able to make vertical solutions. So they not only make your phone, they also make your, in a lot of cases, they make your laptop, they make your iPad. And so they all kind of work together in a nice way that I think people really gravitate towards, which is why it's so popular. But on that same note, it also makes it tough to sort of, see them break out and allow developers to really kind of allow their apps to shine in a way that, you might see a little bit more prevalent on Android, just because they have a little bit more freedom there.
Ashley, you wrote about there's a new robot coming out, and you wrote these things about this robot. It's called the Cosmo Robot. You said it's curious, it's smart, and it's kind of a jerk. I get the curious and I get the smart, but why is this robot kind of a jerk?
Oh, this robot is so cute. So yesterday, oddly enough, was the 10-year anniversary of WALL-E.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted my very own adorable WALL-E with a personality. And this looks like it's a really small, about the size, like fits in the palm of your hand. It looks like a little bulldozer. And he has animated eyes on a screen. And he has artificial intelligence on board. He has some really great little robot moves. He's on wheels. And he can recognize you. So, for example, he is kind of a jerk or maybe he pouts a little bit when you don't play with him after a while, like maybe gets sad. He has a little personality. He's got an emotion engine on board. It's really, really cool. And Anki is the company that made these really cool cars called Anki Drive, and you could race them. And they were sort of smart cars that were toys. And now they're going to make this this robot Cosmo, which, of course, we all have to name him Kramer, right, when we all get our Cosmo.
Sure.
So the CEO of Anki was saying, when it's perfect is really boring. And we want to be able to show off emotions that are generated, when Cosmo does something, or, it will act sleepy when you wake it up, things like that. So it really comes with a lot of personality. And so that's sort of a thing I think we're going to start seeing more of. It's like these robot pets. And it'll be really interesting to see how attached people get to them. Because I remember back in the 90s, we had those little Tamagotchi eggs on keychains that you could take with you and you feed your Tamagotchi and everything. And some people were really attached to them. And so, I really wonder what it's going to be like in the, you know, in the near future, where we start seeing these adorable little robots with really big personalities that are, you know, specifically designed to endear themselves to you, and how people are going to sort of take care of them.
I have one word for you, Furby. It's the same thing,
it is
pretty
similar.
Much.
Yeah. Although
I was like, yeah, it's kind of like a glorified Furby, yet, but I still want it. Oh, I got to have it. It's
what are you
going
to do with it? Is this really just like a pet? If you can't have a dog or cat in your apartment, you're going to get a Cosmo the robot?
I like to think of it as a desk pet. It's small enough. It feels like it could be like my work pet.
All right, I guess. What do you do with it, though? Oh, you're cute today. I would talk dog talk to it. You hear me talk to dogs.
Sure.
It's like, oh, you cute little Mr. Poo-Poo.
You
exactly.
Can do that with the robot.
It'll be so fun. Huh. You could name your robot Fluffy, Wendy.
No, I couldn't.
And Ashley, what about this? Everybody's worried about getting their accounts hacked, but the CEO of Google had his account hacked, right?
Yeah, we talked about Mark Zuckerberg, a couple of his social media accounts getting hacked a couple weeks ago. And now Google CEO Sundar Pichai has had his Quora account hacked. So, and I believe potentially his Twitter account as well was hacked. And so just living proof that even though you could be anybody from just a normal person going about your daily business to the CEO of Google or Facebook, and you still could be at risk from getting your accounts hacked, especially old accounts that you don't really use. That's sort of a thing that people, you know, you don't think about that, about these sort of old, like MySpace, for example. Oh, hey, MySpace got hacked. And you're like, do I have an account there? Should I go check? Maybe I should go check. And then you go check and you say, oh gosh, I have had an account here ever since I left for greener pastures.
I wish somebody would hack that, because I don't remember the password to my MySpace page. Maybe they could tell me the password.
I wish somebody would hack it. Maybe they could update it for me.
Right.
That would be great. They could just add some updates. I'm really busy. I need an assistant who might be a hacker. That would be great.
But really, Ashley, this shouldn't surprise us, because just because he's the CEO of Google, that doesn't mean he's got extra firewalls up. It's almost the same protection for everybody, isn't it?
Well, right. It's on the companies to protect those accounts as opposed to the individual. I mean, you of course can protect your account by having really strong passwords, making sure that you're not sharing passwords across websites. I personally use a password manager, so it actually keeps a local file of all of my passwords. I use an app called OnePassword. And so when I log into or sign up for any new websites, I'm able to sort of set that up, and they will generate a random key, like password for me, like 18 key password, which is fantastic. But also, you know, it takes a little extra time. And so,
hacked, then all your accounts' passwords have been released.
Well, nothing's stored in the cloud, so everything's local, and you're able. It syncs. You have sort of an encrypted key that syncs to all your devices that you use that password manager on. And the only way you can get in is with your very own. You have one master password that unlocks, quote unquote, the vault of your passwords.
And
so
this
that's how a lot of those password services work.
This is not a free one. I'm looking at it now. It's the number one password. I don't know the price of it, but it is not a free password manager.
Yeah. A lot of them are paid. There's a couple of them. I want to say LastPass. There's different price points, which is always helpful. And but also on that same note, I mean, one of the best things you can do that is free and is covered and supported on many large social networks and other sites is two-factor authentication. And that's the one where you set it up, and then when you go to sign in, you put in your normal password, and then it will text you a code. Or you can, you know, it'll have a second level of security, and it says, we're going to text you this code, and then you put that in to prove that it's you. And you can do, I believe the site is 2FA. Hold on a second. I'll make sure it's correct. I always send my friends and family to a whole bunch of to websites to see if the sites they use are supported.
Ashley, while you were looking it up, I just hacked you. In the 30 seconds it took you to look at it. Yeah, I did.
This is terrible. What a terrible day this is. This is not good.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
If you go to two, like spell out the number two, twofactorauth.org, There, it's a whole website that says it's just a master list of websites and whether they support two-factor authentication or not. So you can see if you'd like your banking institution supports it, or if your cloud computing service supports it, like Dropbox, for example. And then if you go to the website itself, you can see, you can look up usually in their knowledge base how you can set up two-factor authentication. And honestly, one of the best ways to protect your account.
And that's twofactorauth.org. Spell out the number two, T-W-O. We are out of time, but next week I want to talk about the live-action Minecraft movie because that is so unbelievably popular. That game has taken so many kids out of the fray of outside playing.
Mm-hmm. We'll true, talk- and adults.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I should count them in. Ashley Escada, you can find her by watching Tomorrow Daily at CNET TV. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Thanks, Ashley. Have a good week. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, you know who people love?
I have a guess.
Go on, take a guess. You won't guess it in a million years.
The chief horticulture officer for Chalet Nursery in Wilmette, Tony Fulmer.
How do you do it?
Hi.
How do you do it? People love Tony Fulmer.
Welcome back, sir.
My pleasure as always.
I have to thank you for some bad hydrangeas that I had in front of the house that I pruned incorrectly, and then my son saw me pruning and thought, well, I'm just going to prune too. So they were terrible.
Yes.
They've come back amazingly thanks to you. So you I also have a Japanese red maple in the front. We've lived in this house 18 years. When we moved in, it was droopy and not really big. And ever since I pruned it properly, this thing is flourishing. Pruning really does a great wonder for plants, doesn't it?
When it's done well and when it's done at the right,
time.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the big thing.
Wendy has buttered you up, Tony. It's time to scold her for something that she didn't want you to know, but you're a professional, so I think you can handle this. Wendy, go ahead.
I planted tomatoes this year, and jalapenos, and cilantro, and basil. My chives came back from last year, but they flowered almost right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been really watering them a lot.
Uh-oh.
Because we've been getting rain. And last year, when we were talking about my lavender that I planted, I overwatered it and killed it.
Yes.
I put some new stuff in. I didn't water it, and that's brown, and I haven't really looked on the side of the house about the tomatoes yet.
Well, we always think it's interesting at the store when we've, and in fairness, I know we've had a cool, wet spring,
right,
and subsurface moisture is really, really good, but it only takes a few days of 90 degrees for that to evaporate and disappear, and especially shallow-rooted things, annuals, perennials, veggies, or even trees and shrubs that have just been transplanted or planted this year suffer very, very, very quickly, and we're seeing a lot of people coming in with drought-stressed plants.
So you still have to water even though it rains?
You have to. I'm not saying you have to go out and water everything, but you, especially the newly planted things, I love the analogy of an intensive care patient. They need to be checked every single day because when it's 95 degrees, it only takes 1 or 2 days and things can really go downhill fast.
I better check the tomatoes.
Like tomatoes.
But this is a good thing with people taking vacations. You got to make sure you have somebody in the area come
someone
by and water
responsible.
Your plant. Somebody responsible.
Someone responsible. Absolutely.
I don't know any responsible
nobody.
People.
Oh,
I really
that's not
don't.
Good.
Family members included.
Wow.
Someone has texted and has a question, and I will refer to that question in a moment. My neighbors have done a weird thing with their tulips because that's the first thing to come up in the springtime.
Okay.
And they rubber band them down. It's really weird looking, but they say that you have to let them shrivel up. And 815 wants to know, what do you do with the dead part of the iris now that they're finished blooming? I know with tulips, you have to let them fully dry down and wither away. Is that the same with the iris?
Right.
Why do they rubber band them?
Well, what they're really doing, and they're probably usually what gets rubber banded are daffodils and not tulips. Daffodils tend to stay upright, but daffodils have long strappy foliage, and after they finish bloom,
they messy.
Flop over, and they can take up a space that big. So people either braid them or they fold
them.
Yeah, they braid them.
That's genius.
Well, the problem is the braiding and the rubber banding really is not the very best thing. In a perfect world, you would just let them flop open because even sitting on the ground, those green leaves are exposed to the sun. And what they're doing now is they're photosynthesizing and they're storing food and they're building up the bulb for next year's flower. So when you do anything to reduce that amount of surface area, exposure to the sun, that reduces the amount of
interesting
of food that the bulb makes. But it's really, really messy for those 4 or 5 weeks. Now, so as far as the iris goes,
yes.
The iris, that shouldn't be leaves. That should just be the dead flowers. And as soon as those flowers discolor, you should go in with a pair of pruners and you go all the way down the flower stalk and you cut that right at where it meets the leaves.
Oh, okay.
But those leaves stay on all summer on the iris.
All right. Bill, did you have a question?
Not about plants.
About life?
Just about life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wrong person to ask.
Mark has a question. Hey, Mark, it's Tony Fulmer from ChaletNursery.com.
Oh.
Hello, Mark.
Yeah, I have a question. How late in the year can I get away with putting marijuana plants in my backyard?
That's a good question, Tony. Mark wants to know how late in the year he can get away with putting marijuana plants in his yard.
I've only heard that they're somewhat frost tender, and I'll leave that the rest of that question to you. I don't know.
Yeah, they should already be planted.
Yeah.
What is the season, Tony? What's the season for marijuana?
Well, I got some out there now, but I want some small ones, but you know, once I get 12 lights, they start to bud, so I don't want to put them out too late.
Thank you so much for taking this question, Wendy.
I'm
I really
sorry.
Appreciate
my
it.
Mom,
I have no idea.
My brother has never smoked marijuana. He really hasn't, Mark, but he put seeds. He just wanted to see if they'd grow. So he put seeds that he got from somebody's album cover probably years
sure.
ago. And my mom kept watering these plants on the side of the house going, these are beautiful. And she'd show people, like, aren't these the prettiest plant? And then finally my brother said, do you know what they are? So she burned them. And got high. The whole neighborhood got high.
Listen to this, everybody. That's Wally Phillips spinning right now. That's what that is.
Mark, what? You have 1 minute. Not even.
Okay, can I throw a shout-out to my mother?
Just
hello,
do
Mother
it.
Dana, can you please let my dog out? I'm working late today. Thank you.
That was lovely. Thanks, Mark.
Smoke him if you got him, Mark.
Word to his mother, Wendy. All right, we'll take a quick break, have a meeting with management, and come back with Tony Fulmer from the Chalet Nursery. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We're talking with Tony Fulmer, who is the Chief Horticulture Officer for Chalet Nursery, 3132 Lake Avenue, Wilmette, Illinois. And even though we have had rain, you still have to water your plants. Someone wants to know how often you should water a hanging planter. Isn't that like almost every day?
That could be. A lot of that depends upon the things people have to consider are what are the plants that are in it and what's the exposure and also what the temperature is. So it's all those things. But yes, again, going back to that intensive care patient analogy, you should absolutely check it morning and evening. And especially if it gets all day sun and if it's up high or if you're in a balcony, really, really off the ground, you're getting a lot of strong southwest wind drying it out. That could be twice a day. It's possible when it's 95
twice
degrees.
Twice a day? No wonder my planters died when I went to Disney. I forgot to tell somebody to water them. And planters really are pretty shallow. Mine are my cement planters. You got to really... Twice a day?
It could be. I'm just saying it could be. But certainly once you have to check at least once a day. But Tony, a lot of it depends upon the plants that are in it, too.
It's fun to watch you when Wendy tells you something sad that she's done with her plants, because you get that look that parents get, which is like, I'm disappointed. I'm not mad at you, but I'm very disappointed.
How sad.
Yep, that's just what I see sad. In your face, yes. In your eyes.
Yeah. All right, Richard's been on hold. You got a question for Tony?
Yes, Tony?
Yes, Richard.
This is I had planted asparagus plants.
Okay.
This is my second season with them.
Okay.
And I did, when they sprouted this year, I did, you know, got a supper's worth.
Okay.
But I had left them alone, which that's what I thought they told me to do.
The first year, yes.
And then now they're, well, this is my second season.
Right.
Now they're about 2.5-3 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
Getting little balls on them. Am I supposed to cut these back or just leave them
alone? No, leave them alone. No, leave them alone. So first year, you don't do any harvesting. The second year, you can harvest very, very lightly, not probably
right.
taking off more than a third of the little sprouts as they come through the ground. And no, you want to leave that foliage on there. That foliage is building up just a little bit like the bulbs. As long as you have leaves on there, the plant is photosynthesizing, it's building up the root system, and then next year, you know, the second full year that they've been in the ground, you can go ahead and harvest much more completely next year.
Okay, and then that will just continue. And
that's right. Yeah.
I'm growing asparagus. That sounds exciting.
It is, but it's a big commitment of space. It's a big commitment of space.
And they do travel through the root system.
Yeah, they require a commitment of space. But it is fun to go out and get fresh asparagus from your garden. And it's kind of a pretty plant.
It is very pretty. Mm-hmm. I was just afraid after that marijuana question.
Me too. I'm afraid of the next call. Absolutely. What's this going to be?
I know I went, kind of brought the show down a little
no,
bit.
No, don't worry.
No, thank you, Richard.
But Richard, we have to run because we want to get some other questions in here. Thank you so much.
All the other questions are marijuana questions. That's weird.
Great.
I'm looking it up at the screener.
All right, Mark, you have a question, something I've never heard of.
Yeah, Tony, I was wondering what your thoughts are. We use a foliar spray.
Foliar?
Epsom salt and water on our tomatoes and our peppers, and I think they actually taste better. I use them on flowers, too, but I just like your opinion and whether or not you've had experience with that.
Not as a foliar spray. I know that a lot of rosarians, people that really love their roses, a lot of them have often used a dry application of Epsom salts around the base of the plant early in the spring. I think the reason you're probably using that is one of the things that tomatoes get is called blossom end rot. And just as the tomato starts to ripen, the whole bottom of the plant will turn, the fruit will turn brown and leathery, and that can be caused by two things. That can be a lack of calcium, or it can be extremes in water. Wet, dry, or too wet all the time, or too dry all the time, and it makes the fruit inedible. So Epsom salts are one of the things that people used to say would correct that, but you're probably better off just using a fertilizer that has calcium on it, and just make sure your watering, if it gets hot and dry, is consistent.
Okay, I use it actually for magnesium because I have very little magnesium.
Right.
The only time I actually spray is when the flower buds first appear.
Yeah, I can't address that as a foliar spray. I'm just used to people using that around as a granular application of the root system.
Good luck with the harvest, Mark.
Thank you very much. And Wendy, have a great day. It's nice. We enjoy listening to you, and Bill.
Thank you.
That's so nice. Thanks.
What happens when the leaves on your tomato plants are turning brown?
Brown can be a lot of different things. Brown spots, are they rolling up?
No, it's just the bottom leaves, probably because I haven't watered them very much.
Well, there's that. That would be the first thing that a plant will do if a plant is dry. It will tend to sacrifice the oldest leaves at the bottom of the plant.
Interesting.
Because they're more shaded, so they're not getting as much sunlight, so they don't contribute as much to the root system. So they'll try at any expense to try and preserve the newer leaves up at the top of the plant.
I've been a lazy gardener this year.
It sounds like it.
I really have. Mm.
And look at this. You had great hydrangeas, and now you're falling back.
I took a picture to show you my hydrangeas. I'll show you my hydrangeas if you show me
yours. All right, guys. We're not zoned for that sort of behavior.
I'll show you my geraniums.
Oh, good God. Jill, speaking of hydrangeas, you have a hydrangea problem.
I do. My hydrangeas are at least 10 years old. They're all seasons. There's three of them. They took about 4 years before they started blooming. And they're beautiful hot pink. Then I had too much, so I kind of pruned them a little bit and separated them. One planted totally by itself. The three are still together. The three will not bloom any longer.
You've broken up their family.
I guess.
That's what it is.
What did you say the name of the variety was?
All Season.
All Summer Beauty? All Summer Beauty.
Okay.
All Summer Beauty is one of those plants that has the landscape changed? Have trees matured? Are the plants getting more shade than they used to?
A touch, but not a lot, because we trim our trees all the time.
Okay. They should have at least a half day of sun. They should have at least 5 hours of direct sun a day, and you want to minimize whatever pruning you're going to do on those.
Wait, you groaned. Are they not getting enough sun?
You know, I would say they get 5 hours, but...
But is that direct or is that filtered? Is any of that filtered through trees?
Yeah, it's filtered.
That doesn't count.
Wah, wah.
That was Wendy, not me. That doesn't count. They really need to accumulate 5 hours of direct sun, and you want to minimize the pruning. You want to wait and try and do whatever you can to preserve last year's stems on the plant, too.
Okay. So I can't trim them all the way down in the winter like I have them?
No, I would not. No, absolutely not. Because all summer beauty is a variety that blooms on last year's growth, so you need to try and preserve that.
All right, so fertilizing, any extra special bloom?
You could use anything that you would use on roses or perennials. You want that high, that middle number should be high. So you just want that to be twice as high as the first number. So like a 5, 10, 5 would be fine.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks, Tony.
You're welcome.
You are a man of many hats. You can go veggie, you can go
ornamental.
Somebody wants to know, and they don't mean grass for smoking, because this is taking a whole new thing.
Thank goodness.
How do you get rid of the grass that's in the perennial garden?
I've tried
picking it out, getting the root of the grass, putting mulch on it, but still, you know, I made my garden bigger and there's still grass that comes
through. Well, you have to be careful about that, because when someone says grass, and we're talking about grass that you mow, it can be annual and it can be perennial. So we can't assume that but there are a lot of different types. So you do that, you have to approach that differently. If you can't get in and pull it by hand and get the root system out, then if you're one of those people that can't do that, then you have to try and use a spray. And the only thing that you can try and use is really selectively is Roundup. But you cannot get that on desirable plants.
Or it'll kill that.
It will absolutely kill them. So the grass has to be green and growing. You would do that on a perfectly calm day. And again, my first choice would always be to try and go in there and dig it up manually, physically.
Get
the root system up, absolutely, rather than go in with chemical in a perennial bed.
Same thing between bricks and a pathway?
No, that's a different story. That gets so tedious that, you know, you can use a complete kill in there because you're not worried about other plants.
Okay. Perfect. He's amazing.
Tony, we don't know how you do it. It's very hard to stump you. Tony Fulmer.
Stump you. I get it.
Whoa.
A tree stump.
Very nice, Wendy. Very
nice.
He's
the chief horticulture officer for Shelley Nursery.
Yep. Accept no imitations. Ask for Tony Fulmer by name. He's at the Shelley Nursery. It's in Wilmette. Thank you, Tony. Have a great rest of the week.
As always, my pleasure.
We'll take a quick break, and then Ryan has the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thank you. Did you get that water that you needed?
The throat monster crept up on me right during that newscast.
Come on, that happened. You're a professional.
You're such a dad of little kids. The throat monster.
The throat monster will get you. there's some audio that is making the rounds of Donald Trump. You've heard of Donald Trump,
no,
Wendy.
Who's
he's
that?
Running. He's running for president on the Republican team. And I use the term team loosely in this case.
Who are they versing?
They're versing the Democrats.
Oh, okay.
This time around. So there's audio of Donald Trump, and I guess it's a lesson in being inconsistent, I guess is what it is. He's been asked many times about the unemployment rate in America, and that is, as you would imagine, a major issue, of course. Now, realistically, if you look at statistics, the number on the unemployment rate hovers right around 5%, maybe a little off by a percent to the low end and to the high end, but it's somewhere in the fives. Now, to be fair, there's a second unemployment number. That number, that 5-point-something percent, is people that are actively searching for work and have put in for unemployment benefits, and that's somewhere around 5%. And if you look at other countries, we're kind of in line with some and we're out of line with others. Some are higher, some are lower. But 5% isn't terrible. If you're one of those people in the 5%, it is terrible.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. But it is realistically somewhere around 5%. Now, there's another number dealing with unemployment, and that's everybody. That's everybody from prisoners to people who are disabled and can't get jobs, and babies and dead people. And
babies are part of it?
Yeah, it's everybody. So that number is going to be a lot higher. But your standard number is somewhere around 5%. So Donald Trump has been asked about unemployment in many different places over the last couple of months. And here's an audio compilation of him explaining the unemployment rate of America. Listen.
You know, right now we have a false 5.4, 5.3, 5.6. Every month is different. It is such a phony number.
That number, 5.2%, is such a phony number.
So the number is a totally phony number. It's probably 18, 19, maybe even 20%.
We probably have a 19 to 21% unemployment.
If you look at the real job numbers, you probably have unemployment of 20%. Could even be 21, 22%.
Could be as high as 25%.
We probably have a 25% unemployment number.
We probably have 25% unemployment.
Probably it's 25%.
25%.
25%.
The number's 25% and probably higher than that.
It could be 25 or 30%.
The number's probably 28, 29.
The real number's probably 25%, probably 30 or 35%.
It's probably close to 30%.
It's not 5.3%. It's in the 20s, 30s. It could even be in the 40s.
I actually saw a number of 42% unemployment. 42%!
Somebody actually read the other day, they said it's actually 42%.
I even heard recently 42%. Could be 42%.
You think the unemployment rate is 25%?
Oh, yeah.
I've not seen that anyplace else. I've not
actually, I've even seen some higher than that. But I, you know, let's go with, I've seen actually some higher than that.
All right, so that would indicate, if what he says is true, let's say it's 25%. And
it's a big if.
And it's a huge if. And he also alluded to the fact that it could be somewhere in the 40s. But let's just go with 25%, and then we can play off of that. That means that one out of four people in America that are looking for a job, and that's in the country, not in really depressed areas, but throughout the country, that's what the unemployment rate dictates, is one in four people are looking for a job and are unable to find a job. I'm pretty sure that's not true.
The one thing he was consistent with was the use of the word probably. Because how can he just say, well, we probably have...
Right.
Do you want someone just saying we probably have, or you say here, according to statistics, blah, 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 blah. He's just talking.
But even when he gives statistics, he doesn't cite any examples at all. He said, I even saw 40%. Some people are saying, he doesn't tell you where he saw that. He doesn't say who the people are. And if it is as high, I mean, I was just playing off of the number of 25%, but now he's alluding to it could be somewhere in the 40s. That means 4 out of 10 people throughout the country who are looking for work are unable to find a job. 4 out of 10. Nope.
And
that's
how
not
is
true.
He going to help those people? How is he going to help those 4 out of 10 people?
By making up new statistics and saying when he's president, now the unemployment rate is 0.5%. It was 40%, but now I'm president, so now it's 0.5%. I'm the best president of all time. I read that somewhere, that I'm the best president of all time. You can't do that.
He sure can.
When
he is.
You know when you're 4 and you're given a license to be that way? And you can just kind of make stuff up when you're 4. But now he's going to be, he's potentially the next president. So you can't just do that. There's a rule that says, and again, now I'm being Trump because there really isn't a rule that says you can't make stuff up when you're running for president. But he seems to not have a hard time doing it. You just heard him asked in 15 or 20 different places what the unemployment number was. And sometimes he was the same. Sometimes he said it's 25%, it's right around 25%. But he just kept changing the number all the time. And I also like that he was amazed that the number changes every month. Because you know what? It does.
He
it does
amazes
change every
me.
Month.
Where was this featured? Because this was a really
Huffington
funny.
Post.
I like that.
If
like
I'm allowed
music.
To quote my source, which he just showed you're not supposed to do. You're just supposed to say, I saw somewhere. I read somewhere. Somebody said.
We probably have gotten this story from the Huffington Post.
Right. Right. It's on the Huffington Post. You can play it for yourself. And
it's great.
I love the conviction by which he does this. Like,
that's
he's not
what
even
makes
sheepish.
It work.
I know.
Honest to God, you say anything with conviction and people believe you.
Right. Right. I always thought that if you wanted to say anything and get away with it, here's what you need to do. You need to hold a clipboard. And you don't even have to have anything written on the clipboard. You just, if somebody asks you a question, you look at the clipboard and you squint and you go, unemployment, 42%. Because there's no, again, you can't prove it. It's just, you're going through the motions. So Donald Trump, without using the clipboard, when asked a question, he just gave a myriad of answers, none of which are accurate. He didn't quote sources. He just said what he felt like saying.
But how many people are going to check what he said? You know, they follow a candidate. They love this candidate, and whatever he says is law. I mean, People
could say
do
that
your
of
homework.
Anyone.
I know.
There was one guy in that montage who said, "You keep saying that it's 25%, but I don't see that anywhere else."
Yeah.
And then his answer to that was, "Well, it might even be higher. I keep saying 25%, but it's probably higher than that." That was the way he combated logic by making up a higher number. You think 25 is bad? I saw 90% once.
But the guy didn't press him after that because it's like, again, you say it with conviction.
Right.
It's like, oh, he must know something I don't know.
Where did you see 40%? Show me exactly where you saw it. I'd love to read that report. Where was it 40%?
I probably saw it somewhere else.
Right. Right. And don't, you know, here's the sad reality of that is, and it's not just Donald Trump. It's almost any politician. I'm not going to say it's every politician, but it's almost every politician who just now plays by those rules. I'll just say it. What's the worst that could happen?
I don't know, but 847 now says I'm off those polls because I've been looking longer than 6 months.
There is truth to that. There really is truth to that. They stop counting you after a while. But it's not, please believe me, this country does not have 40% unemployment. Even the worst areas of the country do not have 40% employment. So to say that the whole country has that, that's just irresponsible.
And that number doesn't include the underemployed either. And 773 says, Trump is a leader of men, not a mathematician. Be fair, Wendy. He's a leader of men?
Well, in some ways, I can almost give him that. Because he's a businessman who has a lot of people working for him. But the country runs, even though you like to think, Well, that would work, wouldn't it? If a guy can run a bunch of businesses, mostly successfully, why couldn't he run the country? But when you run a business, everybody working under you tends to, when you say something, they
right.
nod their heads and go, well, the boss says it, so I have to do it.
You don't have foreign dignitaries going, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't want to? Then you're fired. You can't fire people.
Right.
And who were we just talking to yesterday? And I can't remember, but about Bruce Rauner, that, you know, he was a great businessman, too, that everybody was talking about, but he's
right.
not doing that great of a job now.
Right.
It's a different animal.
If you're running Coke and you don't like the guy who's running Pepsi and you say something derogatory toward him, the guy who's running Pepsi isn't going to declare war on you.
Right. That would be terrible if it really came down to that.
Those are the cola wars you always hear about.
Or McDonald's and Burger King.
Right.
Wendy's, who would they side with?
Right. Who knows? All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back in a few moments. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. A little while ago, we had Tony Fulmer on from Shelley Nursery. He always gets a lot of calls. People love to talk to Tony because you know why? He knows his plants. He knows plant life. He knows what to do to make your plants thrive. And one of the calls, one of our listeners called in and had a question about his marijuana plants.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony was a little ruffled, but he answered the question.
He did. He just said that they're not going to survive frost, so get them in the ground now is basically, I'm paraphrasing.
Right. Very helpful. And I think Tony would be an accessory to a crime based on what he gave out as advice. I'm pretty sure that may be the last time we talk to Tony.
No,
without
don't
him,
say that,
because
if he's listening, Bill, he's going to feel terrible right now.
It reminds me of a story that I just saw on DNA Info about a guy, a local guy from Avondale, who had a similar problem. An Avondale man caught growing $150,000 worth of marijuana in his backyard has been sentenced to 2 years of probation. Gilberto Leon pleaded guilty last week to producing marijuana, court records show. But his excuse is the reason I get to this.
Oh, I can't
this
wait.
Is the reason. It's a great excuse. Cook County Judge Earl B. Hoffenberg sentenced Leon to 2 years of probation. He's going to have to pay $1,094 in court fees. This is according to county records. Leon was arrested last summer when police looking for a burglar accidentally stumbled across his 11 potted marijuana plants in Leon's yard in the 3000 block of North Kimball Avenue. Officers have been called to the area after police received a 911 call that somebody suspicious was walking through the alley and peeking into backyards, according to the arrest report. Police hopped Leon's fence at 10 p.m., found his plants, valued, as I said, as $150,000. Leon allegedly then told officers that he didn't know that it was illegal to grow marijuana.
That's my mom's defense from years ago.
Is that possible? That's not possible, is it?
I, It's possible because, but see,
he thought that was okay to grow it.
Cause but what was he growing it for? And because if it was valued at $150,000, to me, I'm thinking he's selling it. It's not just personal use.
Right. That's got to be a
business.
And
why does he just get probation then?
That's curious, too.
I mean,
because if there's that much,
you know, if you want an occasional after dinner smoke and you're growing your pot plant, so be it. I'm sorry, that doesn't bother me. But that's worth $150,000. That's more than an after dinner smoke.
I don't think police would have done anything. Like, let's say in the scenario you just painted, somebody has a plant, a single plant, and it's just for their own personal use. I don't even think police would do anything about it at this point, would
they?
They would
just pot it, just blend it in with your other plants in the garden. What are you drawing attention to it for? Patio weed, like patio tomatoes?
Right.
No, just put it in the ground.
Maybe they had it shaved like topiary. Maybe they had it cut to look like Cheech and Chong. And the police were like, this guy's an artist. Look at this. This guy knows what he's doing.
I guess you could think it's not illegal to grow it if, again, it's one plant. But seriously, $150,000? Weed's not that expensive.
No, that's a bunch, right?
So do we know if he was selling it? Don't we assume that? I guess you can't assume anything.
If it's that much, I mean, $150,000, that's serious. I don't even know what the breakoff would be. Like, what would be the cutoff to where police would just look the other way and go, we have more important things to worry about. But once you're up in the $150,000 range, but I just love him, this guy Leon with a straight face who goes, nobody told me it was illegal. What are you going to do? It's a hobby.
Somebody says police grossly overestimated the plant's value.
Oh, really?
I don't know. What did you say? Three plants?
No, more than that.
Three potted plants, I thought you said.
11 potted
plants. Oh, 11.
And potted in every sense of the word. 11. But that's a pretty, I'm no farmer, but that's a pretty good yield, isn't it? If he's got 11 plants. Yeah. If he has 11 plants and your total value is in the neighborhood of $150,000, or as Donald Trump would say, $3 to $4 million, that's pretty good.
All right. Well, now somebody's against you, Bill. I can't keep up with these posts. Sorry for Leon, but he just got probation, so that's good.
Yeah.
According to Fortune.com, Donald Trump is right. America's real unemployment rate is 40%.
No, it's not. It's not. There's no way in the world that the unemployment rate of the United States is 40%. That means that nationwide, 4 out of 10 people searching for a job are without a job. And that's impossible.
I don't know enough about it, but I know there are a lot of people looking for jobs. But
that's true. That's absolutely true. There's no question about it. It's nowhere near 40%.
Well,
it's never been
40%. Fortune.com says it is.
How are they getting that number?
I don't know. We should call them and ask them.
I'm seeing 5.5% as of May.
It's been hovering in the mid-fives for a year. And that's several sources all saying basically the same thing. Some are off by a tenth or two-tenths of a percent. And like I said, there's that second number, which includes
the whole shebang.
It's people who are either semi-retired, it's people who are incarcerated, it's people who are unable to work for physical reasons.
The Bureau of Labor Services, which is a government branch, reports May 2016 was 4.7%.
Is that a .gov website?
Yes.
So they might flower it up a little bit.
You know what you have just proven to me? I trust no one. Me and Mulder.
That's it.
I trust no one. It is definitely lower than it's been.
Right. No wonder Gilberto Leone is growing all this marijuana.
to escape this right. craziness.
To escape all the nuttiness. That's it. All right, we'll take a quick break. Ryan will give you the news. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has coming up in a little while. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Ryan Burrow. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder.
Are you trying to scare him?
No, I don't want to scare Ryan. That's the last thing I want to do is scare Ryan Burrow.
You were doing a voice like this.
That's my regular voice. That's how I normally sound. There's an ad that the Red Cross has put out that is very, very entertaining in a weird way. They're being called. I know you wouldn't usually equate entertaining with racism, and I don't. but it's entertaining to me the way that this is playing out. The Red Cross put out an ad about swimming pool safety tips. And in the ad, it's very cartoony. It looks like, remember the cartoon Wee Pals?
It does look from exactly a long time ago? Like that.
Yeah, it looks like the cartoon Wee Pals.
And Wee Pals, Bill.
I guess we are. So in the cartoon that they put out to illustrate what you should and should not do when you're swimming in and around a public pool.
Water safety.
Water safety. There's roughly a dozen or 14 kids in the pool, some of them doing good things in the pool, swimming properly, being cautious. Some of them doing things erratically, dangerously. Now, it just so happens that in this cartoon, roughly half the kids are white and half the kids are black. And for some weird reason, the majority of the kids doing bad things are black, but the majority of the kids doing good things are white.
No, it's two and two.
Is it?
Yes, because I saw this and the Red Cross is apologizing about it, but there's a kid diving and it says not cool, which I don't know why, because there's a diving board there. Why can't he dive?
I think because he's diving so close to another child that's right by the diving board.
Oh, she should get out of the way. She's a redhead. She shouldn't be out in the sun anyway.
So you blame the Irish.
It's the Irish
that need to be put down for this.
There's that kid is black, the one diving off the diving board, which I guess is a little close to the kid. But again, so what? The other black kid in the pool, it says not cool. What is he doing?
He's making a scary face.
Maybe he's drowning.
Well, that's not cool.
Exactly.
It's not cool to drown in a public pool. I'm not sure what exactly that kid's doing wrong, but he's being blamed for something.
Yeah, and then...
I don't know what he's... But that makes it even worse. That kid's not doing anything wrong, and they just illustrate that he's not cool because he's black. So
well,
that's
that
not
is
cool.
Not true. And then there's another little kid that it's in the lower right-hand corner. It's a white girl who's jumping in. And
no, she's being pushed. They show her being pushed by a black kid.
Oh.
And that one says not cool.
All right. Well, that isn't cool.
So out of the four not cools, no, there's five, I guess. There's five not cools. One of the not cools is a black kid and a white kid both being blamed for what looks like jumping into the pool together.
No,
they're
running.
Are they
You're
running?
Not supposed to run because, right. See the puddle there? He could slip in it. We'll put this up on our Facebook page.
All right, so that's one not cool. That's a shared not cool between the black kid and the white kid. Then you have the black kid diving in. Then you have the black kid just making a face. Then you have the black kid pushing a white kid into the pool.
You shouldn't do that, black or white.
But all the black kids in the swimming pool are being blamed for something.
The majority are, yes.
Right?
But, you know, I saw this, and honest to God, and this is going to sound terrible, all right? And it's going to sound like I'm lying, and I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at this, and I'm like, wow, that's a cute little ad. Not cool. No, I didn't see that it was the black kids that were targeted. I just saw them as kids.
I don't think you would see it right away, but you have to admit, the percentages seem a little unfair, don't you? That... Every black kid in that pool, except for one, is involved in some nefarious activity that they label with the words not cool and an arrow pointing at the black kids. That's not good.
That's not cool.
That's not cool. And then all the white kids, like there's one girl who's being very patient and waiting for the diving board. That's a white kid. She's labeled as being cool.
The dad with the baby is
That's
a white
cool,
dude.
That's cool, right?
Again, a redhead. Get him out of the sun, people. And you shouldn't have the baby in a pool.
So that is, well, right, they should be in a baby pool.
Yeah.
So they can use it as a toilet.
That's exactly why they shouldn't be in the big pool.
Right.
Because the water's way warmer in the baby pool.
Right.
Wonder why.
Right. But even the American Red Cross, whose poster this is kind of copping to the fact that it was inappropriate. After the fact, it was already published, but after the fact, they realized that this was not in their best interest.
But it was, I don't believe it was intentional.
I don't know that it was intentional. The American Red Cross apologized on Tuesday for their pool safety guidelines poster, which depicted children of color as misbehaving or not cool for breaking safety rules.
See, I'm so pleased that they have people of color in this ad.
Yeah, I guess there might have been a time where they weren't included at all. But now that they are included, they're bandits. They're ruffians.
It does appear to show that.
Doesn't it? It does. The apology I just mentioned came after the photo circulated of the poster on social media. The poster, which was seen on display at pools in at least two towns in Colorado, read at the top, "Be cool, follow the rules." Below the heading were depictions of children playing. The white children were labeled as behaving cool, while the children of color were depicted as misbehaving or not cool for breaking pool safety rules.
It doesn't rhyme, though. It should be cools, follow the rules.
Right. In our swimming pools.
Or about be cool in the pool.
Don't be a fool. Stay in school.
I pity the pool.
The Red Cross said that it has discontinued the production of the poster.
Well, it's too late.
I wonder why.
It's been out there already.
And have removed it from its website and swim app. Here's what they said, the Red Cross. "We deeply apologize for any misunderstanding, as it was absolutely not our intent to offend anyone."
I believe that. Am I that naive?
No,
I really believe that.
I believe it too, but then once you notice it, you can't help but notice it. And go, well, that's way out of line that all the black kids but one in this pool are labeled as not cool and doing something bad, including the kid who's just swimming and making a funny face.
I don't even know what he's doing, although is that his foot or is there like a baby Ruth behind him? Maybe they're saying not cool.
Oh, I don't know what's going on there. No, I think he's just swimming.
Well, I have no idea
what they're blaming him for. It says, "We deeply apologize for any misunderstanding. It was absolutely not our intent. As one of the nation's oldest and largest humanitarian organizations," and they are, the Red Cross is.
Isn't that where you took swim lessons at a high school through the Red Cross? That's what I did.
I did not, but that was offered at other schools near me. "We are committed to diversity." Well, they do. They have black kids and white kids in the pool. They just point out that all the black kids are not cool for doing things. "And inclusion in all that we do every day," they said. And they have apologized and they have taken this picture down because it is bad. Not cool.
It's so funny to hear adults say that.
I know.
Just listening to you say it makes me laugh. That is not cool.
I like to stand by the public pool and point out when people are not being cool. That's my summer job.
Yeah, but you stand there in a leather jacket and a t-shirt with your thumbs up. And
right.
That's not cool.
I'm like Fonzie.
Because you're hot.
I'm Fonzie. I'm
Bilzy. That leather's
Bilzy.
Hot. Bilzy.
All right. We will take a break. Have you seen this poster? Do you agree or disagree? We believe that it was unintentional. What would the Red Cross have out of doing this intentionally? What would they possibly get out of it? But like we said, once you see it, you go, wow, that's slightly imbalanced. All the black kids are being bad and uncool. All the white kids are just trying to enjoy themselves.
Rich white folk.
I guess.
In their backyard pool.
We're at 312-981-7200. If you haven't seen it, it'll be up at our Facebook page. It may already be. Is it, Kevin?
Yes.
It already is. All right, more after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wednesday, the Big Blue Machine rolls out of Cincinnati. You got Rizzo, Bryant, and Russell versus Joey Votto. How you doing? Cubs, Reds,
pretty
Wednesday
good. What
morning.
What about you?
At 11:30 on WGN TV Sports. Last night, Chris Bryant only hit 3 home runs. Let's hope he steps up his game just a little bit and gets more into it. We're talking about what's going on with the Red Cross. They have put out a pool safety poster that some are calling racist because there's a bunch of kids swimming in the pool, and over some of their behavior are the words cool, mostly the white kids who are doing things the polite way in the public pool. And then over the majority of the black kids are the words not cool because they're doing things wrong, including one kid who's just kind of swimming. I can't for the life of me figure out what he's doing wrong.
Kevin thinks maybe he's holding another kid underwater.
Maybe.
But you really can't tell what the kid's doing wrong.
No idea what he's doing wrong.
He's in the pool.
Right. He is making a funny. His eyes are bulgy.
Maybe he's passing gas.
All right, let's assume. Well, then that is not cool. No matter what your nationality, that is not cool.
Maybe he didn't wait 30 minutes after finishing his meal before swimming.
Oh, that's true.
Look at the bends.
That's not cool.
That is not cool.
Why did we believe that?
I want to point out that there's no, this is troublesome to me. There's no Asian kids in the pool. Why are Asian kids are allowed to swim with black and white kids? Where are all the Asian kids?
They weren't swimming that day.
Not cool.
All right, someone has texted us a very interesting analogy to this, or opinion, I should say. 847, problem with the Red Cross thing in any company is that if they did get opinions from other coworkers within the company for approval, almost no one will tell the truth that it's not a good thing because that person doesn't want to have their job in jeopardy. So it's like you're scared to speak up sometimes.
Wait, can I ask a question? Does that mean, like, during the planning stages of this poster, like if somebody at Red Cross drew, and it's not somebody at Red Cross, they would get an ad agency, a PR firm to right. draw this ad up. So then somebody's got to okay it. Somebody at Red Cross has to look at it and go, yeah, that I think that represents what we're trying to convey. Let's go with that.
You know, but I'm you know, I always try to put myself in other people's shoes. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy DeCastro, who is our
best friend.
Well, yes, he's many things. He runs this place. Let's mm-hmm. put it that way. He showed a video of a WGN commercial, a WGN radio commercial, and I loved it. But now what if I saw something that was wrong? I would you be scared to say, like Jimmy was so excited to show us, would you say, I love it, but there's something that might be a little off
here. Boy, that's
here.
Tough.
See what I mean?
I think I would, if it were me, I would privately come to him later, like after he showed it to everybody, and I'd go, Jimmy, the commercial's great, but
there's not enough.
Wendy pointed out
a
couple things that she didn't think were very good.
Yeah, you would blame
me. It's not my word, but it's hers. So.
And now Wendy's talking to other people.
Right.
You might want to.
Very displeased
with
what
she
saw.
But see, when you put it into perspective in your own life, you'd be, you know, hesitant to say something. Although I have spent my whole life just kind of going through the motions. Like if a boss says, hey, do you like this? It'd be like, yeah, whatever, because you want to keep your job.
Right.
But at this point in my life, I really feel the need to be honest because 9 out of 10 times that I've brought something to a boss's attention, they're like, oh, my God, you're right. Thank you for bringing that up.
Somebody I know at another radio station in town, and I apologize for being cryptic, but people would know the players involved in this story, so I won't say their names. But he worked for a boss at another radio station here, and everybody who worked for this guy kind of agreed with whatever he said. But my friend never did. Like, my friend would call him out on things all the time. And
in
he
front
said
of
to
everybody?
My friend, not always in front of people, but privately, he'd go, hey, I was thinking about that thing from yesterday. I don't know, maybe this instead of that. He would do that often. And the guy, the boss, said to him at one point, you're the only person around here I can trust.
See what I mean, though? That's why, as I've matured and been in the workforce for a long time, I will, if I'm asked, yeah. I will be honest with my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't like to give my opinion when not asked.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
But let's bring this then to our situation. If they had an ad campaign like this that seemed to have undertones of racism, wouldn't you say, hey, guys, just to protect yourselves, this is something that some people might read into this. You might want to consider switching some of those roles around and making some of the white kids bad and not all the black kids bad.
I would think that would make you a star in the office.
I would
absolutely
hope.
So yeah. You need to speak up, but it's an interesting point because some people are scared to say anything, and I must confess, looking at that ad, it didn't jump out at me.
It doesn't jump out until you so kind of hold it up to a microscope and go, hey, that's true. All the black kids are being labeled as bad. All the white kids are being labeled as good. But sometimes it does take that little extra, you know, magnifying glass to be held up.
That's why I wouldn't have said anything if this was our campaign, because I wouldn't have noticed
it.
Oh,
maybe,
yeah. And then I start feeling guilty that I didn't notice it, but I'm just seeing a bunch of kids. I'm not really trying to count how many blacks, how many whites.
Right.
Why are there no blondes with a big butt? I want to be represented. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's just a cartoon.
Right.
Do you think of yourself as blonde?
Shut up. 219 says maybe the kid with the silly face is doing horseplay. We all know that's a no-no.
Yeah, they don't allow horseplay in a swimming pool.
My question is, who designed the poster? I'm guessing they hired an outside firm, unless Red Cross has an artist on staff. Find that out if there's agenda.
I don't think there was, but it's probably an ad agency, a PR firm. Yeah, Red Cross probably isn't set up to do advertising. That's not what Red Cross does.
630, why are people so sensitive? Maybe why are people so sensitive? Maybe they are just very tan kids. Red Cross now needs to waste all the money that was spent to do something good just because a few people were offended.
They're definitely black kids. They're not tanned kids. that's not even a
remote. Well, black people can get tans.
Well, that's not, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, these are not tan kids. No. And even that would be considered uncool. You're supposed to use sunblock. Come on, kids. Come on, cartoon kids. Use some cartoon sunblock.
I don't know. Bill, I saw this thing as it broke yesterday or the day before, and I'm looking at it going, well, now that you point it out, yeah, that's pretty bad.
But wouldn't you, again, purely hypothetically, if you were a black person and saw this, wouldn't you feel just a little bit differently?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I mean,
I know I would. If I saw this, I would just go, how come every black person in the pool but one is being accused of doing something bad? Those percentages are unrealistic.
I really didn't notice the color of the kids when I saw the poster. I thought, oh, that's cute. What's the dad doing in there with the baby? He should be in the baby pool. That's right.
That's the bad one.
And he's got a cool there. It's
yeah.
Not.
Yeah, they give him high marks. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. You can reach us so easily, 312-981-7200. So easy. You and I have discussed this in the past, that on the web, on the World Wide Web, which is now all throughout the planet, Wendy, the World Wide Web goes everywhere now. There's these little things that I call traps, and what it is
we're a sucker for a slideshow. That's what it is.
It's a slideshow. So there'll be a picture of Eddie Munster, and it'll say, you won't believe what these people look like now. And then you go, oh, I would like to see what Eddie Munster looks like now. So you click on it, and then 40 minutes later, you go, I just wasted 40 minutes.
Tell me about it. It's the biggest time suck on the internet.
The worst.
Who has had botched plastic surgeries? I got to know.
Right.
That's when I found out Katy Perry was a smoker.
Yeah.
Because it's like, who is smoking in Hollywood? And then they have stupid captions.
I know.
But I know. Waste so much time on that stuff. Well, every time I get sucked into it.
I saw one yesterday that I know you'll enjoy. It said, you won't believe, and this is all in caps, so you know this is serious, you won't believe who these celebrities' famous parents are.
I saw that. I didn't click
on it. Did you see this? I clicked on it.
Of course you did. I thought I knew all of them, so I didn't want to waste my time.
Here's what's amazing. I believe that everyone listening to this, everyone within the sound of our voices, will know who these celebrities' famous parents are. There's not, like, when I saw this, I go, oh, well, I love celebrities and I like to know stuff like this. So let me sit down and learn a few things. But these couldn't be easier. These are embarrassingly easy.
All right,
even by internet standards. Wendy, could you guess who Kate Hudson's famous mother is? Impossible.
I could and I would. It's Goldie Hawn.
It's Goldie Hawn. Everyone knows this. Can you guess who Liza Minnelli's famous mother is? Of course not. No one knows this.
If you looked somewhere over the rainbow, you'd find Judy Garland.
Yes. Jane Fonda has a famous father. Did you know that? Actress Jane Fonda is the offspring of somebody famous.
She's also on the no surgical procedures list. Just a facelift, I think.
Right.
Henry Fonda.
Henry Fonda. All right. Now, pretend you're me for just a second.
Are you saying everyone?
Yes. I went through three of these, and they were like, I knew all three of these the day I was born. Like, I came out of the womb knowing those three.
Yeah, but you know a lot about the celebrity lifestyle.
But wouldn't you, after three, wouldn't you have said to yourself, well, these are ridiculously easy. I'm not going to waste any more time. Not me.
No, because you think they're going to get harder,
right,
don't you?
Yeah, in my head, I'm like, okay, they gave me three sample ones to suck me in so that everybody reading this goes, wow, well, those were easy, but I bet the hard ones are coming. And they did. Did you know that Kiefer Sutherland has a famous father?
Is his name Donald?
Yeah.
It's called clickbait, by the way.
Is that the term for it?
Clickbait? We're bait.
Now, you'll never get this one. Angelina, you know Angelina Jolie? Her dad, as it turns out, is a famous person. Who would that be?
Oh, my God. I'm like, I don't. You've stumped me.
Mm-hmm.
John Voight.
Yeah. 5 for 5. And there wasn't one that was even close to you not knowing, right?
No.
Alexa Ray Joel has not one, Wendy, but two famous parents. You won't know either of them, will you?
Billy Joel and her name, the blonde.
Uh-oh.
I can't think of her name.
Come on, you can do this.
She's a model.
Cheryl.
We were trying to misguide
Christy
you.
Brinkley.
It's Christy Brinkley.
Not Cheryl Teagues.
Right. Charlie Sheen has a famous dad, Wendy. Did you know that?
No.
Yes,
Martin Estevez.
Martin Estevez, a.k.a. Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
Born Martin Estevez, yeah. I like that it doesn't say that... I'm blanking on
Emilio?
His brother's name. Emilio. It doesn't mention that he's
Why
got a
famous... Why did Emilio keep the Estevez? Because look at who's the less popular of the three? The two Sheens and Emilio Estevez.
Well, but there was a time where he
there
was.
There was a time. Not, where is he now? What
current.
Have you done for me lately? Change
right.
your name to Sheen.
Right.
You'll go places.
Yep. Isabella Rossellini, Wendy, has a famous mom, but nobody knows who it is.
I can't think of her name.
Ingrid Bergman.
Yes, thank you.
Yep. And her dad actually is also famous,
yes,
but not really
film
mentioned.
Director?
Roberto Rossellini, very famous in Italy. Not as famous in the United States. All right. Now, again, I want to stop the proceedings for
that
just a second.
That one might have trumped me.
Because we've
Ingrid
gone
Bergman.
Through seven of these, and I thought to myself, the first six were unbelievably easy, but I could see where people might get tripped up on Isabella Rossellini. So these are going to get better. These are going to get harder. Like, they were playing me for a little while, giving me some easy ones.
Did it get harder?
Nope.
Get out of here.
Nope. Michael Douglas's dad is famous. Did you know that?
Get out. That's a joke.
It's here. Kirk Douglas.
Douglas.
He of the dimpled chin. Colin Hanks, as it turns out, has a father who's also in the same profession.
Get out.
It's true. Tom Hanks.
Did it ever occur to you two wise ones that maybe this was intended for 19-year-olds?
I don't, but even a 19-year-old would know most of these, if not all. Isabella Rossellini might have tripped some people up.
312-981-7200. Are we just taking millennials or
to
anyone?
See anybody.
Because these are. Cause I did say I something, though, Steve, and I do understand. Because I said to Bill, I go, we kind of know more about this than the average person, which is this is probably the only thing we know more about than the average person. And Kevin and Mike, our intern, were kind of iffy on some of these answers.
Yeah.
So you could, Steve Bertrand might be right about this.
But I have to say, in all fairness, both Kevin and Mike, our intern, were raised by wolves in the wild.
I mean, Kevin's pretty bright, but.
Well, the cutest thing was when you.
Mike worries me a little bit.
You said something, you go, who is Jane Fonda's dad? And Kevin said, Henry Fonda. And you said, yes. And he goes, really?
Yeah, he
like
was shocked.
He goes, I heard the name. I didn't really know.
He was surprised.
And then Mike knew one that Kevin didn't know.
One that we haven't gotten to yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we've not gotten to it yet. Let's do this. Let's test our theory. Give us a call. We want to see if everyone in the world knows these, or just Wendy and myself. We're at 312-981-7200. Couldn't be easier. Which celebrities have famous parents? Give us a call. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. You are questioning the copy. The man is a certifiable lunatic. He can't hold him accountable. We found... Now, I didn't even know the term until just now, but it is called clickbait. These are these little boxes you see on a lot of websites that tell you things that you think to yourself, oh, I wouldn't mind knowing this. This might be fun to know. And then it takes 35 or 40 or 50 minutes. And then when you're done, you go, I knew all that stuff. Why have I wasted my time? This particular one I found yesterday... And it was celebrities. It said celebrities who you won't believe who their famous parents are. But I did believe it because I knew all of these.
They're pretty easy.
We've asked listeners to see if they knew them as well. I hope that you all do. I'd be shocked if anybody got any wrong on these.
All right. Craig, we'll start with you. We're just doing our own little survey here. And survey says what?
Craig, did you know that Gwyneth Paltrow's mom is famous? Who is Gwyneth Paltrow's mom?
Gwyneth Paltrow's mom is Claire Danes?
No, because Claire Danes is younger than Gwyneth Paltrow, so that would be hard.
Okay.
So it is not Claire Danes.
How old are you?
I know the name, but I can't think of the... I know the face, but I can't think of the name.
Let me see if I can give you a hint. You would know this actress maybe from the Meet the Parents movies. She was Robert De Niro's wife in the Meet the Parents movies.
Which Barbara Streisand, yeah.
No, that was Dustin Hoffman's wife in those movies.
Oh, I know
this
her
is
name.
Not a name that would flow off the
harder?
Tip of your tongue.
Yeah. She has a lot of spirit. Does that help at all?
I know who it is, and I don't
Blythe
know.
Blythe Danner. Blythe Spirit was the clue.
Blythe Danner.
Blythe Danner is absolutely
right. All
right,
Craig. See, you right. Knew it.
I couldn't think of the name. Once I start laughing, it's gone.
And it's harder.
Well, thank you. You're proving Bill's point.
Thanks, Craig.
I love Wendy's laugh, by the way.
Isn't it a nice laugh? Come on in and tickle her sometime.
No, do not do that.
I've been in bad moods in some days, and you just, after I hear you chuckle and laugh and giggle, well, I got hung up on.
Isn't that nice?
Well, thank you. It's Bill's fault for making me laugh.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Have a good one,
thanks,
Craig.
Thanks, Craig.
All right, Barbara's next in line.
Barbara, are you ready?
I am ready.
Barbara, you know Carrie Fisher. She played Princess Leia in the Star Wars movies. Her mom, as it turns out, and her dad are famous. Can you name either one of her famous parents?
Debbie Reynolds.
Debbie Reynolds is absolutely right. Do you know where her dad is for extra points?
Fisher. He left Debbie to go fool around with Elizabeth Taylor.
Correct.
What's his name? Fisher.
Rhymes with Eddie.
Eddie?
No. Eddie Fisher.
Teddy Fisher.
You should have said rhymes with Teddy.
No, I just
Eddie.
Wanted to throw her off the scent.
Oh, very smart.
And I did.
Yep, it worked.
Thanks, Barbara.
You got it, Barbara. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
I love it. Just listener participation because these are really easy, and you're betting that everyone's going to know the answers.
I assumed everybody would know these. I would have assumed.
This is John.
John, are you ready?
I'm ready. I got the first two, so let's see what this one is.
John, Jamie Lee Curtis also has not one but two famous parents. Can you name either or both of Jamie Lee Curtis's famous parents?
It's Tony Curtis.
Yes.
Is her dad. And, the lady from The Birds.
Yeah.
Not from The Birds. Uh-uh. Not
but
from The Birds.
Different.
No.
Hitchcock movie.
She's not real good at taking showers. She has a problem sometimes in the shower.
I know who it is.
I can't think of her name either.
I know who it is. I just don't know her name all of a sudden.
Well, you got Tony Curtis, so you will get credit for this, but her mom is the great Janet Lee.
Janet Lee.
That's right.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Yes, 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 yes.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Now, he mentioned The Birds. Is there a person on this list?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm excited about that one.
We can get to that one now if you want to.
All right. Let's give that one to Mitch.
All right. Mitch, Dakota Johnson from 50 Shades of Grey has, again, not one but two famous parents. Can you name them? And Wendy just gave a pretty good clue.
I'm going to go Don Johnson. I have no idea. Honestly, I didn't get the first four.
Don Johnson is one. That's her dad.
Is it really?
Her mother is Melanie Griffith, and that ties in because? Because
Melanie Griffith's mother was Tippi Hedren, who was in The Birds.
Right.
It's all incestual. Have you figured that out?
It is. Yes, it is. Mitch. You got that
Thank
one.
Thank you. I fell on that one. Boy, that was great.
It worked. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're just proving your point, Bill. You're absolutely right. Rose is on the line.
Hello.
Rose, I'm going to give you, now I have to admit, I've said how easy these are. These next two are both a little bit challenging because they're both young actresses that I don't know if everyone's aware of, but I'll give you, see if you can get either or both of these, okay? One of them is Bryce Dallas Howard, who is just in Jurassic World, and she's been in a bunch of other movies. Bryce Dallas Howard. And the other one is Lily Collins, who's been in a bunch of kind of low-budget films. That one might be tough.
Yes, I knew everything else. I'm older, so...
That's all right. Do you know who Bryce Dallas Howard's father... Yep.
Ron Howard.
Ron Howard is that one, right? And Lily Collins, that one might be tough. Her dad is a musician. Same last name.
Right.
He's a good drummer.
Right. Oh, my God.
What do you think?
Phil Collins.
It is Phil Collins.
Oh, my God. You
pulled
that off.
Beautiful. Well done. Woo! Well done, Rose. Thank you.
I'm a movie buff.
You are. You did great.
Thanks.
All right.
Thank you, Rose. These are so easy.
That was probably
the hardest.
I think
they're getting harder.
Yeah.
Don't keep getting them harder.
This is Laura.
Laura, don't worry. It gets really easy again. Ready? Jeff Bridges and Bo Bridges have a very famous father, both Jeff and Bo Bridges. Who is their famous dad?
Lloyd.
Mandelbaum. 100%.
Lloyd Mandelbaum.
No, wasn't he in Seinfeld?
Yeah, I think he was.
As the
yeah, yep.
All right, you got that one.
Cool.
Nicely done.
I'm a loser. I know all these.
No, you're doing great.
Laura. I really thought that maybe you and I knew more than the average person, that maybe these weren't just so easy.
These are so easy.
Vicky, prove Bill right. Hey.
Vicky, this is a very, very tough one. Ed Begley Jr.'s father is famous. He is?
This is a joke.
Oh, it's right. Look, it's right there. They put this one, Ed Begley Jr. So who would his dad be, do you think?
Come on, say it. You know you're feeling it. Just follow the pattern.
By the way, as a side note, the man we're talking about is an Academy Award winner. Ed Begley Jr. never nominated for an Academy. Ed Begley Sr.
See?
Yeah.
That is the dumbest one on the whole thing, because who is he?
Well, he won an Academy Award. He was in a movie called Sweet Bird of Youth a long, long time ago, but he was also in a lot of episodic television.
Would we know him?
Yeah. When you see a picture of Ed Begley Sr., you'll recognize him. He used to be on Love American Style. He was on a bunch of shows in the 60s and the 70s.
All right. Well, so, good one.
You got that one. Well done.
Thanks,
Vicky. Take care.
Yeah, we have one more,
Do you want to do another one?
Allison's on the line. Hi, Allison.
Hi.
Allison, how have you done so far? Have you done pretty well on these?
The two tough ones were a little...
They were challenging.
Really sticklers for me, yeah. All right. A little bit.
See if you can get this one. Ready? Sofia Coppola, actress and sometime director, is the daughter of somebody extremely famous. Who would Sofia Coppola's father be?
Francis Ford Coppola.
Well done.
And who's her cousin who's an actor who was in various movies? He's
very intense.
He is very intense.
Yeah, I think that one you got me.
And he changed his name. It used to be Coppola, and now it's something relating to a bird.
Yep.
Yeah. Nah,
this is tough. This is tough. Sofia Coppola's cousin, Wendy, is?
Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage. Absolutely right.
Oh, very good. Very good.
You did well.
That's why I love listening to you guys, because you're pop culture like me.
Oh, well, excellent.
Well,
thanks,
call
Allison.
Back anytime. Yeah. Thank you, Allison.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
All right. There are more of these, but they just get easier and easier, so I'm not going to do any more of them.
I can't believe that Ed Begley Jr. I don't know. Ed Begley Sr.?
Wendy, do you know who Laura Dern's father is?
Bruce Dern.
Yeah. Do you know who Allison Williams from Girls, who is her famous father?
The newscaster.
Brian Williams.
Brian Williams. I couldn't think of his name.
Jaden Smith, one of our country's finest actors, Jaden Smith, who is his famous mother and father?
Will and
Smith.
Jada.
Yeah, Jada Pinkett Smith. And one more, this goes, Josh Brolin, you'd never get that one.
That one you've stumped me.
Josh Brolin, you don't know?
I have no idea.
James Brolin.
I never heard of him.
Tyler.
You're kidding.
I'm kidding.
Oh.
Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler. Robin Thicke has a famous dad. Who would he be?
Alan Thicke.
And I'll give you one more, Robert Downey Jr., who's his father.
Robert Downey Sr.
Yep.
Okay, was he famous?
Yeah, he's a famous director.
Oh.
He's directed a lot of stuff.
This was the easiest. Really, check the clickbait that has, plastic surgery's gone awry. That one is.
I know.
It's very scary.
This is the easiest one in the history of the internet.
It is.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Steve has the news, and then there's more stuff ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thank you very much. There's a woman named Diane Newmark Zahner, and she's a researcher, and she has written a book. She's the author of a book called I'm Like So Fat, Helping Your Teen Make Healthy Choices About Eating and Exercise in a Weight-Obsessed World.
That's the name of the book?
Yeah, it's a long title.
I'm So Fat?
Like So Fat, Helping Your Teen Make Healthy Choices
That's
About Eating.
That's not a book I would buy if I had a fat kid, because
she's trying to put it in the language of a teenager who uses the word like a lot. So a teenager wouldn't just say, I'm fat. They'd go, I'm like so fat.
I know what, but to me, that's not a book that I'd want somebody to see me having in my hand.
Oh, well, it's funny you say that, because the purpose of this is to say, they were talking to her, the senior healthy living editor at Huffington Post interviewed her and was asking her about the best ways and the worst ways to deal with weight issues if you have a child or a teenager who has weight issues. And if you follow the statistics, our country, this is the fattest we've been ever. It's just gotten worse and worse and worse and worse. There are more obese people. There are more morbidly obese people. And that's all age groups, especially kids and teenagers.
And there are kids that have no weight problems that still come home and go, "Mom, am I fat?"
Isn't that something?
Well, it's sad.
It is sad. It's tragic. So what they tried to find out from her, from this author, is exactly what is the best way of dealing with it, because in some ways, as the parent, you have to address the health issue of it. But on the other flip side of the coin, if you're too blatant about it, it's really going to mess up your kid.
Big time.
So what's the right? I don't know if there is a right way. Is there a right way? You have to say at some point, look, it's up to you, and I'm not here to criticize, but you're following unhealthy eating habits.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Is that? Yeah, I don't know if it is.
But a kid who's fat knows they're fat. I mean, fat people know they're fat. So when people say, you know, you put on a little weight, maybe we should readjust things, then feelings get hurt.
But even though what you say is true, if you're overweight, you know it. It's not a shock to you. But there's got to be some transition between knowing it and doing something about it. Right?
And I think kids have especially big problems because they don't necessarily know how to do something about it. You know, being an adult, I know how I can lose weight. I just don't choose to do it.
Yeah.
But I know how.
Yeah.
I mean, it's portion control, it's eating healthy items, and it's cutting out junk food.
And exercise.
Yes.
So it's finding
Although weight loss is like 85% of losing weight, diet is 85% of losing weight.
Yeah.
Exercise is just great for your body.
Yeah.
It helps you from getting rickety when you get old.
Sure.
It's really good for you. The combination of the two is the best.
Right.
Out of all things.
Right. Right.
But it is weird. Like a kid will say something like, you know, "Oh, I've put on a few pounds," but especially like teenagers, what do I do? You know, maybe a girl would ask that. A boy wouldn't say, how do I lose weight? They just go, "Oh, I'm fat," and then they stop trying.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very touchy situation. Does she have some suggestions?
Well, she uses, there's a whole bunch of examples in here, various case studies. There's a woman named Farah Bonero, who's 39 years old. She's in Puerto Rico, remembers that her mother constantly compared her to her slimmer sister, dangling privileges and special gifts in an attempt to motivate her to lose weight throughout her childhood.
Okay, that is the total wrong way to do it.
Yeah,
Somebody just texted, Bill, you have to be careful. My daughter had an eating disorder. Just support your kids without talking about weight at all. It's like, what is the right age to approach, you know, to help them? You know, as a parent, maybe you could just start making healthier meals without even talking about it.
Yes.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. But all right. So in the situation of the person who just texted where their daughter had an eating disorder, it has to come up, right? It's tragic that she has an eating disorder, but you can't just not say anything about it. There has to be something that you can do to help them through that. Right?
Yeah, or a good therapist, seriously.
That's probably the best move.
I think the kid would be more apt to talk to somebody like an outsider kind of thing.
Yeah.
I know you'd think, oh, it's family, but family's mean to each other. Family,
sure.
I mean, you know, you're comfortable with one another, and sometimes, you know, you say things you don't mean, and I think with an outside voice, that could be more beneficial.
When I was a kid, my mom was a dance teacher, and she had all these students, as you would imagine, of varied body sizes.
Right.
Right. Some of them were extremely thin. Some of them were quite overweight, and then everything in the middle. And my mom would always bring up a student and say, you know, she's 7 years old and she's on a diet, you know. And I didn't at the time. I'm like, wow, that seems really young, 7 years old to be on a diet. But then, as I grew up and, you know, I would see my daughter's friends and stuff, I would say to myself, I guess you almost have, if you have a kid that's really heading down the wrong road and is eating terribly and not exercising and doing anything about it, you almost have to bring in somebody to help them with a diet to fix that, don't you?
But the diet is the deadly word.
You
want to just say, hey, we have to start eating better.
That sounds much better, doesn't it?
Because really, that's healthy people eat healthy food.
Yeah. Yep.
It's not really a diet. It's good habits for life.
But now in this woman's case, Farrah Bonero, who I mentioned.
I like that name.
That's a pretty name. She said that she remembers her mother constantly comparing her to her slimmer sister.
That's horrible.
Never going to work.
It's not
going to. Because even though you're in the same family, the way you process the food is going to be differently. So how's it going to benefit you to say, how can your sister be so perfectly shaped and thin and you're not? That's not, how could that work?
Okay, and that's really a good way to do it. Like, you know, you're a failure.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Maybe the heavier one is smarter and the skinny one is dumb.
Right.
You know, it's every kid is different. Every person's different.
All right. What are your
smaller portions spread out on a smaller plate? That's a good way of doing it.
It is.
Without saying anything.
Right. Just do it subliminally.
Yeah, just, you know, you're making dinner and it's like, can I have a second helping? Oh, I only made one box of, wild rice tonight. So you only get one helping.
All right. Can we do this? We need to take a break, but there's something along these lines that I'm going to say that may shock you.
Oh, my God. I'm going to shock you. Campaign?
I'm a shock jock, Wendy. That's what I am now. I'm a shock jock. So something dealing with your kids and their diets that I firmly believe that I know is a little controversial, but we'll get to that in just a little
bit.
He's
going to shock us.
I'm a shock jock. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to weigh in.
I get it.
I didn't know it until I said it. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
That was good. And just aside from the little voice crack there, it would have been perfect.
I'm still working on it. We're talking about this woman. She's written a book with a lengthy title. Diane Newmark Zahner has written a book called I'm Like So Fat, Helping Your Teen Make Healthy Choices About Eating and Exercise in a Weight-Obsessed World. Here's what I was going to say before. Be prepared to be angry at me. In two different instances, I have known people in my life who have children that are really overweight, quite overweight. And in both of those cases, I've said to my wife, I blame the mom and dad 100% for this. I don't blame the kid at all, because it's the mom and dad who kind of foresee the food and which direction and how much the food of the kid is eaten. And my wife has said, well, you can't really blame the parents for this. You can't really blame the kid. It's something that they'll grow out of eventually. And I hope that that's the case.
Some kids do.
A lot of kids do. But I still, like, if that was one of my kids, I would look at myself and say, this is my doing. I'm not doing anything to help this kid.
It's my job to help them.
I'm obviously getting this kid way too much food that is not good for him or her. So I put it on the parents. I really do.
Well, you can't put everything on the parents, but the parents, it depends how old the kid is.
31.
Blame
the parents.
But I mean, you know, like, I'm in charge of making meals. I sometimes don't get home in time to make meals anymore, so we've been eating crap food.
Yeah.
So it's under my control to do it. And now places offer healthy choices pre-made, like Mariano's and Jewel. They have like a healthy dinner.
I've
and we were
those.
Talking to that guy, nutritionist, before, and it's like, you know, even if you're going to have a hamburger twice a week, when you make it at home, it's less calories. You choose better ingredients.
Right, sure.
And chances are you're not having the French fries or the milkshake to go along
yeah,
with it.
That's
so
true
you're
too.
Really cutting back on calories. Someone has texted us and says, I'm not going on a diet. I'm going on a healthy eating binge or a fat reduction program. No, that's not good. Vacation from food. The thing is, you have to eat.
You know how, you know this better than anyone, twice a year I cut sugar out for a month and a half or 2 months. And I never call it a diet because it's really not a diet. It's just, I don't know what, there's no right phrase for it, but I feel so good when I'm not on sugar. And I mean, I leave it completely out of my diet. There's no sugar at all. And it's just all I drink is water and club soda. And for the first day or two, it's really tough. But then by the third and fourth and fifth day, your body just, it's like, this is the way I'm supposed to feel.
Then why do you go back to it?
Because I just love that stuff so much. Like every day there's stuff, like we were talking about Starbursts earlier, or now there's, you know, there's a place by me that has Italian ice that's so good. Reese's peanut butter. It's hard to say no to all that stuff.
It is, but I mean.
But when I do, boy, do I feel good.
You're crabby though.
Yeah.
You're not really.
Mm-mm.
Our food is changing compared to years ago. We've made major changes in farming practices. We're all eating more processed foods. That is totally true. I mean, good or bad, there is we used to eat pure food growing up. My mom worked all day, single parent. She'd come home every night. It was a meat item, vegetable, and some kind of starch.
Yeah.
Because carbs aren't the devil. It's just all things in moderation and portion size. And she cooked every night. And she didn't make a ton of it.
Uh-huh.
Some people say it's a lifestyle change. It is, definitely. That's why diet sounds so temporary.
Right,
you have to just say, no, we have to start eating better. Someone else, this was something I wanted to share. Bill and Wendy, I weigh 110 pounds in second grade growing up in Italian family. All we ate was pasta, but to the rest of my family, they were all thin. I remember my parents sent me to the doctor and he put me on a diet pill in second grade, which is just a stimulant. I sat there shaking in school, didn't know what was wrong with me. Prefer to say that diet didn't work. When I get into my teens, I started this finally. I still have a hard time with weight control. I'm 55, but I can't.
But that's so rough to just be in second. When you're going through that in second grade, I mean, it's rough at any age, but that's so hard to be enduring that.
And
you're
when
7 years old.
Eliminate processed foods is a must. When a parent compares you to a thinner sister, that can cause many issues, including eating disorders. How sad.
Also, I imagine then there's some bitterness toward that other sister. Wouldn't you imagine?
Well, yeah.
Even though that other kid really didn't do anything, you just go, oh, now I have to live up to that model that you're setting, and I can't do it. That's got to be really tough.
Terrible of that mother, and gifts don't work or bribes. My dad tried with me.
Yeah.
That's not, I mean, again, it's like, you know, fat people know they're fat. So you want to do it, I think, smaller portions. I think somebody liked my idea of just start cooking differently and don't say anything. What's for dinner tonight? Oh, we're having grilled chicken breast with a big salad.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is kind of up to us as parents, but... You know, you don't know what the kid's doing either. If they're going out for pizza after school, if there's a pizza parlor in the area.
Sure. Yeah.
And some kids process it differently. Here's a comment. Hi, Mary.
Hey, how are you?
It's a tough subject.
I have to say I'm seeing red when Bill said that so parents are to blame, because some parents, including myself, I have a son that's very overweight. We have done everything we possibly can, and we can't follow him around all the time.
That's right.
We've joined health clubs. I cook healthy. But once he leaves the house, I can't control what he's eating and what he's putting in his mouth. And it's such a struggle, because it's not like any other kind of addiction where you can just stop drinking alcohol or stop gambling. It's,
You know, have to eat every day.
Yeah, you have to eat every day. You can't. And, you know, mentally, I think he knows what he should be eating and he shouldn't be eating. But it's not as easy when you're a young man and all your friends are eating everything they want and you can't do the same thing.
How old is he, Mary?
He's 21.
He is. And there's been, at some point, there's been some kind of counseling to try to help him through this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it hasn't worked.
No. We've tried.
But there comes a time, too, where he's just, you know, going to say, you know what, I'm done. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of being winded every time I try and walk. And it comes a time where he's going to have to make that decision for himself. So that's why you're absolutely right. It's parents of a young kid, they might be to blame.
Yeah, right. In both of the instances that I'm talking about, we're talking about early grade school kids. I've known two kids in the last several years that have really been pretty overweight. And in both of those cases, everything you say is valid, and it is hard once they get to be teenagers and they can drive and they're out on their own. You can't be with him 24 hours a day. It's impossible.
Right. It's very frustrating, because as a mom, I blame myself. But I, you know, and I've had lots of, and I've talked to a lot of people about feeling the blame, but there reaches a point where you just can't. They have to be responsible for themselves. As much as it kills me to watch this happen to him, it's very hard to sit and watch your child almost self-destruct, because you're worried about, you know, the health concerns, not so much aesthetically, but how healthy he is. And than to have somebody point the finger and say, this is all on you. I do that enough to myself, and I don't need somebody else doing it to me, you know?
Do you or your husband have weight issues also?
My husband does.
He does?
It's like a genetic roulette. I mean, yeah.
And so you see similar patterns in your son as with your husband, huh?
Oh, yeah, I do.
How's your husband with that? Does he recognize it too?
Oh, yeah.
He does.
Definitely, you know, and it's hard when you like food.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard when you can't manage it. You can't process it the same way other people can.
And, I mean, look at what we've got now with all these foodie shows. I mean, food is really – I mean, I think about growing up for all this – all of our family parties, like communions, graduations, it was all centered around food.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, it's most families, but Italians for sure. It's like, you know, that gives you the excuse to just strap on the feed bag. So we've been –
Right, exactly. You can't celebrate anything without food. You can't – you know, you can't go out for a birthday or anything like that, and you can't necessarily force your child to eat what you think is in his best interest.
Right.
You can tell him what's in his best interest, but you can't force it.
But someday, you know, your son's going to come to the point where he's like, I hate feeling like this every day. And, you know, how can you be to blame for a 21-year-old kid who has the free will to do whatever he wants to do? That's like blaming a parent for a drug overdose in their kid. You can't be their monitors every second.
No, you can't. You can't be with them all the time.
Mary, I hope so badly that things are figured out. And I can't imagine what you're going through, but I hope everything's okay there.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Thanks
for calling. Don't see red. Just listen to us. All right.
I know. I will.
All right. Thanks
for calling. Because it's true. I mean, parents if the parents are providing the meals, I think the parents have a responsibility.
In the case, like I said, I know two cases where this is going on, where we know people whose kids are pretty seriously overweight, and in both of those, the kids are early grade school, where the parents are kind of dictating everything that child eats. And you just go, it's on you at this point. You have to control this for your kid. He or she is too young to figure it out on their own.
But there's really no way to do it, because if you say, we're going to cut back on your food, you know, you can be in bed and they can go down and
steal
cookies.
It
usually comes from a feeling of, you know, just your confidence levels down.
I know. We need to take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more show for you. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and in the studio, Manya Brashear-Pashman, who is the religion reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And as we've discussed in the past, I'm Catholic and proud to be a Catholic, although I could be a better Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a listener who gets irritated every time I say that you're half Catholic and half Jewish.
They say that's impossible.
But you can be.
I'm the offspring of a Jewish man and a Catholic woman. So
we are going to talk about this new pope who everybody is raving about from all different religions. And Pope Francis over the weekend said that Christians and the Roman Catholic Church should seek forgiveness from homosexuals for the way they had treated them. I'm sure, Manya, you saw this over the weekend. To me, this is a huge deal.
It is, and this is just another example of Pope Francis saying what's on his mind while he's on the papal plane. It was one of those impromptu press conferences, and it was during one of those impromptu press conferences in 2013 when he uttered the famous phrase, "Who am I to judge?"
Mm-hmm.
Which has been quoted and quoted and quoted ever since. Of course, conservative Catholics say that it has been misquoted or misinterpreted, but he repeated it on the papal plane over the weekend, at least a different version of it, saying that, you know, if someone is a person, if a gay person, you know, seeks God and is a person of goodwill, then who are we to judge? You know, repeating that famous phrase. And so, and I like how you said he said Christians and Catholics should seek forgiveness, because he said more than just we should apologize. He said we should seek forgiveness. And I think that there is a difference, at least in the Christian world, there is a difference.
Absolutely. So. And now this was on the heels of the tragic Orlando shooting as well, that he was asked about this. And he recalled church teachings that homosexuals, quote, should not be discriminated against. They should be respected, accompanied pastorally. And then he went on to say, I think that the church not only should apologize to a gay person whom it offended, but it must also apologize to the poor as well, to the women who have been exploited, to children who have been exploited by being forced to work. It must apologize for having blessed so many weapons. Mm-hmm. That to me is very deep. I know he's not changing any doctrines, but it's like, welcome to me as a Catholic, that's like they're welcoming anyone. And that golden rule comes to play. Treat others as you yourself would like to be treated. I paraphrase that, but do unto others as you would like them to do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
Be nice to people.
It seems so easy and basic, so why isn't it that easy and basic?
Well, I think that that there are a lot of expectations that are actually imprinted on the things that he says, and people set very very high bar for these expectations. You're right. No doctrine has changed here. And he has been saying these things since 2013. He's been saying, you know, these very kind words, but he has not changed any doctrine. And I think there were some really high expectations placed on the Synod of Bishops that met last fall. They issued, or the Pope issued, a document from that Synod on family life, and that there were some really high expectations about what it would say about same-sex marriage or the treatment of gay people in the Catholic Church. And it didn't say much at all, except we should welcome everyone in the church. But the door is closed on same-sex marriage still. And, you know, there were some bishops, including Chicago's own Archbishop, Blaise Supich, who was very much in favor of providing pathways to communion, to receiving communion for gay couples in relationships. And, you know, that was not brought up or included in the Synod document. So, you know, there are, like I said, there are high expectations that aren't always met. So, you know, do unto others, for some, doesn't quite make it.
Yeah. So how do we go from these very positive words and messages, which right now are just words and messages, how do we go from there to the actual changing of doctrine? Are we going to see that anytime soon, do you think?
Anytime soon is a relative term when it comes to the Catholic Church. Anytime soon could be 500 years.
Oh.
so right around
the corner.
With this
very
in perspective
slowly.
Here.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do you change doctrine? Well, synods, bishops, right? I mean, bishops from around the world gather, representing their church in their context, and that's what happened in the fall. Is that people from the United States of America, but also Africa and Europe, and they all gathered, and you know, they have to come up with a consensus of sorts. And when doctrine is changed, it's not just something that the Pope can snap his fingers and instantly make happen. He probably could, but it probably wouldn't be received very well, actually. but
it's like the president having to answer to Congress and Senate and everybody. There's safeguards in place so that one person can't just change things.
Sort
right?
of. Yeah. I think so. I think that's a fairly good analogy. I mean, I do think it's a little different in the church, but you know, I think that there is certainly an approach that this Pope advocates for, and that is synodical, you know, the synodical approach, where you want the bishops to be on board. You want everybody to be on board with church teachings, and it's a universal church. You want everybody to agree. You want to do God's will as well.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you want to do what the Holy Spirit is moving you to do. That's what they believe.
I'm curious. Say you have a gay couple and they have a baby and they bring the baby into the church. Like when I got my kids baptized, there's like a little class that the parents go to. And I wonder if, I mean, they would probably baptize the baby.
Probably so.
It's a church by church basis with things like that,
but
right now.
But that's not marrying a couple. That's blessing a child.
Right.
But I know there are gay people that go to my church and I feel bad for them. Our church makes them feel welcome, but in the grand scheme of things, they're kind of not welcome.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that baptizing a child is not something that a priest would oppose. Or that church teachings would oppose to baptize that child.
Even though it's being raised by two men or two women.
Yeah, I mean, that child's parents may not be able to receive communion in the church, but their child eventually might be able especially if they're raising them Catholic.
Right.
Isn't that sort of hypocritical, sort of? You don't think so?
I don't necessarily think so.
No,
I don't, you know, that child is not violating church teachings. I mean, the church does not consider homosexuality a sin. They consider acting or homosexual acts to be a sin. They expect a homosexual couple to remain chaste.
It's okay to be gay,
homosexuals to remain chaste.
So they're saying be gay.
No sex,
but
Bill.
Don't have sex.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And so, you know, that child isn't, as long as that child is chaste,
then it's okay.
They're not sinning. Yeah,
but for the heterosexual world, you're not supposed to have premarital sex. Not supposed to be on birth control.
Right.
And devout Catholics are against all that stuff. And then there are some other Catholics that kind of pick and choose and feel like, you know what, God forgives. And I want to go to church every Sunday and maybe I've sinned. And those who haven't, throw the first stone.
Yeah. That's every, they call them cafeteria Catholics.
Right.
And there are a lot of them. In fact, most of them, right?
Yeah.
In the question of the baptism, I don't think that they would hold it against that child. And, you know, the big question that was talked about so much in that Synod of Bishops was what happens to divorced and remarried Catholics who also feel quite alienated from the Catholic Church, because they are unable to receive communion if they have not gotten an annulment of that first marriage. And that was really the issue that got so much focus. And that was the issue that Archbishop Supich was initially addressing, during a press conference in Rome. He talked about the need to provide pathways to reconciling with the church and to trust people's spiritual lives to those people, and to respect that and you know, allow them or kind of accompany them, to use the Pope's word and archbishops, to accompany them through that journey, and to do what they think is right in their own conscience. And he believes the same about gay people in relationships as well. So there are a number of people who feel alienated by the church for one reason or another.
Sometimes when I was a kid, if there were people in the parish that got a divorce and they needed an annulment and they were stalling, if you made a contribution to the church, they found a way to get that annulment kind of fast-tracked. Does that still go on? Is that still a thing?
I don't know. I have not heard of any cases where that still goes on.
No, all right.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
After all, it is, you know,
the business. Right.
Humanity.
Yeah.
And the annulment thing confuses me too, because, you know, the church does not agree with divorce. So if you go in, that's just like, what is an annulment? That the marriage never existed?
It evaporates.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it did.
Well,
but they're willing to look the other way and go, well,
and that
pretend.
Because that you're going in and kind of saying, my marriage didn't work, I want to start anew. I mean, are there papers to fill out?
On false pretenses. You know, I went in thinking one thing and that was not what it was. And so that annuls the marriage. I mean, that's a very distilled version of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it works, or why they are willing to, as you said, turn the other way.
Yeah, right.
You know, to them, it wasn't a valid marriage if it was based on lies or false pretenses.
But it's funny, because in some of those cases, it was people like we knew that were married for 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. But then the church found a way to say, yeah, well, it didn't, you know, in our eyes, it never took place. Mm-hmm. But it did. You got kids and stuff.
Yeah.
So it did take place.
Yeah,
I know. And that's gets me confused about my religion a little bit, too. And we did pre-Cana before we got married, wanted a priest that we knew at our church. But during the pre-Cana, we were asked, you know, do you two live together? And Jim and I looked at each other, not
Uh-oh.
Knowing what to say. And I'm like, I am not lying to a priest. So I said, yes. And I thought that he was going to say, then I can't marry you. And he didn't. And I know there are old school rules in the church. And I love what the Pope is doing, Pope Francis is doing, but I don't see these doctrines ever really being changed.
Right. Well, I mean, the doctrines may not change, but also, I mean, there are also little things that can be done. I call them little. They aren't that little. I mean, there are two situations right here in Chicago. Senator Dick Durbin has written to the Pope, wrote to the Pope shortly after his visit to the United States, because the cardinal in the Dominican Republic, in Santo Domingo, was using gay slurs to criticize the U.S. ambassador, Wally Brewster, who's from Chicago. And he was saying terrible derogatory things about him. Wally Brewster is an openly gay ambassador, actually married his partner the day he was sworn in as an ambassador. And nothing, as far as I know, know, nothing has been done. There has been no response. There has been no action, not even a slap on the wrist for the cardinal in Santo Domingo. That's not a change in doctrine. That's just asking for a slap on the wrist. Right.
Yeah.
That has not happened. Here in Chicago, two employees have filed federal complaints against the Chicago Archdiocese because they were fired from their jobs at Chicago parishes because they were in a same-sex partnership, a same-sex marriage, I should say. And shortly after they married their same-sex partner, they lost their jobs. And so, again, not a change in doctrine that they're calling for, just, you know, they're asking for what they believe is fair treatment
right.
as employees. So there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. A long way, but it just is, it's reassuring to see new breath coming from the new Pope in a way. It makes me feel proud as a Catholic to do that. And again, you know, don't think things are going to change overnight because, as Manya Bashir Pashman said, it's going to take a while, and that could be, you know, 5 years or 500 years, as you put it.
Exactly.
Quick break here, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. We're talking with Manya Bashir Pashman, writes for the Tribune and has for, wow, since 2003. It's a long time.
Not bad. Congrats.
We wanted to talk to you about the Pope saying the church should ask forgiveness for past treatment from gay people. I also wanted to read this one part. Manya had said the church teaches that homosexual tendencies are not sinful, but homosexual acts are, and that homosexuals should try to be chaste. Francis repeated a slightly modified version of the now famous "Who am I to judge" comment he made about gays on the first foreign trip after his election in 2013. Mm-hmm. The question is, if a person who has that condition, and I will address that word, who has goodwill or who looks, let me start this again. The question is, if a person who has that condition, who has goodwill and who looks for God, who are we to judge? And something lost a little bit in that translation. Condition in Italian could also mean, like, in that situation.
Exactly. Yes.
Because condition almost sounds like an ailment of some
right.
sort. And that's inappropriate.
Right. I mean, it's intrinsically disordered has been a phrase associated with homosexuality in the past. So when a word like that is misinterpreted, it can cause more harm than you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Before he became the Pope, did anyone see him being quite this liberal in his views, or is this a surprise?
I think this is a surprise. I will say my best source of information on that was a conversation I had with the late Cardinal Francis George. Cardinal George found a lot of Pope Francis's remarks early in his papacy to be very confusing, very ambiguous, but confusing. That was the word that he used, because Pope Francis would say things like, "Who am I to judge?" and people would take it and run with it. And Cardinal George, who sadly never made it back to Rome after Pope Francis's election, he told me that he wanted to, because he wanted to sit down with the Pope and say, "What do you mean? Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be a good cardinal. I want to be a good archbishop, but I'm confused, and because what you're saying is not clear to me." And he said that in the same conversation that she said, you know, when we elected him, he was not this way in Argentina. He shunned the media. He didn't do impromptu press conferences on the papal plane.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Pope they expected. It wasn't the Pope Cardinal George expected. So,
interesting.
I think this was a bit of a surprise. Yeah.
Well, I think there's hope, and that's what Pope Francis gives me. There's hope, and just honestly, what is it? Do unto others as you.
You can do it.
No, I can't. I've tried three times.
Come on.
Do unto others as you would like done unto you. That's not right.
That's similar.
Just be nice to people.
Be nice to people.
Really be nice to people. Thank you so much for coming up. It's a pleasure to meet you in person. We've talked to you on the phone.
Yeah.
She's Manya Bashir Pashman, and we can read you at the Chicago Tribune.
Yes, you can.
Thanks,
Thank
Manya.
You.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Bless you.
A quick break, and then we'll find out what Roan and Ann have next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.